Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
Doing fantastic today, Adam. This has been quite the week as a DC fan. I mean, well, first of all, just personally, last Sunday night, I got to a week ago from today, I got to go see Batman 89 in theaters for the first time, which was just an incredible experience. Then Tuesday, The Death of Superman came out, which was just amazing. And then on Thursday, Teen Titans Go to the Movies came out as well, and that was just amazing too. So two new DC movies in 1 week, and then I also got to experience another one for the first time ever in theaters. So,
well, I can vouch for two-thirds of those movies. Welcome to the club on Batman 89 and seeing it in theaters.
Thank you.
I did it about, how old is that movie?
29
years ago. Yeah, so I did it 29 years ago when I was six. if I could only go back. and then Death of Superman I watched, and I think it's a much better adaptation than the Superman Doomsday one from about a decade ago now.
Although that one I think was awesome too. So I love that.
I'll say this, I didn't dislike that one. There were issues I had with it, but this one is a vast improvement in my opinion. And Teen Titans Go is not for me, so I'm skipping that. So I can't comment on that. But we're not here to talk about any of those three things tonight. We are doing one of your more appreciated topics, and that would be Smallville.
Absolutely.
season 5 is where we are, so we are now halfway through our 10-season-long televised review of the series.
But as I pointed out before we started recording, not quite halfway through if we count the season 11 comics.
Yes, that's why I said televised, but we'll go with your logic. but to do that, I thought we'd bring in a fellow Superman aficionado and Smallville fan. You've heard him here before, I think twice already. This is the third time. And I can't say third time's the charm because he was good every other time we've brought him on. But Zaki Hassan is back. Zaki, welcome back. Thanks for agreeing to do this again. You keep coming back on, so you must enjoy the experience on some level.
I always enjoy chatting with you guys.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So what we do is usually we start the show with comic recommendations. And so since you've been the guest of honor, what is your recommendation? Have you read anything recently or something, let's say, maybe that's a little bit older that you that you've read that you want to?
Well, I guess I have two recommendations. One is the latest issue of Action Comics, issue 1001. I've just been really, really enjoying the Brian Bendis run on the character. I had sort of drifted away during the New 52 era, and I've come back to Superman following Rebirth, and I was a little trepidatious about what Brian Bendis would do, but I've just genuinely been enjoying his take on the character. I think it's really fantastic. I think it's great for longtime readers and for new readers.
Yeah, I haven't read that one just yet this week, but it's on my to-do list, so I will check that out. And what was your second recommendation?
So my second recommendation is after seeing the Shazam trailer last week, it kind of got me jazzed to go back and read some old Captain Marvel / Shazam stories. So I'm currently working through, again, the Power of Shazam series from the 90s by Jerry Ordway. And if you haven't read that, you know, just a gem of a series. It feels like even back when it was coming out, it was always kind of under the radar a little bit, but it was always solid. And with this movie coming out, it's a great chance to revisit that series, and it gives you a perfect overview of the character and his world.
You know, I'm glad.
Well, that relates to a birthday present you just got, doesn't it, Adam?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I will mention that in a second. But I'm glad you mentioned that book specifically, or that run specifically, because I haven't read much Shazam. I know him more from his animated appearances. And I think it was the Unlimited. I think he was in a little bit of Unlimited Justice League.
I think that episode clashed. Yeah. Quite Superman. Yeah, that's a
great episode. Then he was in, I remember him from Superman Shazam, the animated film, the 30-minute short, which I thought was great. Then, of course, he's been in Young Justice before, which I could talk about Young Justice all day long. I won't. I'll refrain, but I could. And he's been in Justice League Action, and of course the DC animated movie line, the recent direct-to-video. I think it was Justice League War was his first appearance in one of those in continuity and stuff. Yeah. So I know him more from that. And then I read Geoff Johns' run, the back issues that were in the New 52 of Justice League. And I really like that because to me, you put Geoff Johns on pretty much anything, and I'm there. And Gary Frank's art is phenomenal, so that's what I know him from. So to have another avenue to go to would be cool leading up to the movie. So I'll definitely take you up on that recommendation as well. Jordan, what's your recommendations? There's no Batman by Tom King this week, so what is it?
It's not a Tom King Batman week, so that means I'm going with something else, which would be the latest issue of the Injustice 2 comics, which would be issue number 68. It deals with this summit in Atlantis between all the different factions. So you've got Batman's people, you've got Ra's al Ghul's people, you've got the Atlanteans, and you've got the governments of the world, and it's this really cool summit. There's a really nice little subtle Batcap moment that I absolutely adored, and there's also some great stuff with Harley in the issue, so highly recommend that. And then I'll also throw out one other thing, which is that I'm continuing my reread of the Batman Strikes comics.
Okay.
Which, of course, I know I brought them up last episode two as one of my recommendations, but you can never go wrong with those. Like I said before, that was the first comic book series I ever read regularly, and I just have an immense love for that.
That show to me is, by the way, I will agree with you, it's underrated. My comic recommendations, one is one that I actually read, and then one is one that I was lucky enough to receive as a birthday gift, which I haven't read yet, but I when it is released digitally, I will, because I'm not going to open that book because it's a rarity. But the one that I actually read is Batman Beyond number 22. It came out this past Wednesday. I love the Batman Beyond animated series, and I love the fact that it's continued in comic form. And this recent issue introduces a futuristic but modern day for Terry McGinnis Scarecrow. And the story, I won't give anything away, but the story ties into a past adventure of Bruce Wayne's, and there are flashbacks, and the way they integrate the Bruce Wayne story with the Terry McGinnis story is very solid. And
does the new Scarecrow, does he look like Michael Rosenbaum's character from Batman Beyond Return of the Joker?
There are a little similarities, but there's quite a few differences, and one of the differences is this is a bit of a spoiler, but Scarecrow is a she here. So it's a big difference from Michael Rosenbaum's animated version. But I just love the way they integrated the Bruce Wayne story of the past with the current Terry McGinnis story. And also it's the introduction of a Robin, or it's the continuing introduction of a Robin to Terry McGinnis's Batman, which is interesting. So that's what I recommend reading if you haven't checked it out. The art is fantastic as well, in addition to the writing.
Is it Shway, Adam?
That was mentioned. I will say it's Shway. That's not something I typically tend to utter around, in general. But I will allow this. I'll say it this week. But the other recommendation is, well, I can't recommend it in terms of having read it. But if you are a collector and you collecting comics of yesteryear, it was my birthday July 28, which as of this recording was yesterday, and my parents lovingly bought me a first print issue of Shazam number 1 from 1973. It has Shazam, Billy Batson, and Superman on the cover. Like I said, I can't wait to read it, but I have to wait till it's digitally released on Comixology. It's not yet, but I hope it is soon, because that the copy that I was gifted is in such good condition that I don't dare take it out of its bag and board. So I will patiently or impatiently, depending how long it takes, wait for them to digitize it on Comixology. But if you're a collector and are looking over those things, and with the Shazam trailer coming out recently, I'm in a Shazam mood. So if you're a collector and you're on the hunt for some Shazam stuff, see if you can find Shazam number one.
I have a feeling they might digitize it, in the lead up to the movie. I think there's a good chance they'll do that soon, because they're constantly digitizing, old back issues, and they do every week. They probably do like 40 new ones.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's sooner rather than later. All I'll say is that when I look at the prices of the comics back then, and I see 20 cents, and then I see, damn it, they got two stories, and so they got more story for less. I get a little aggravated, but it is what it is, and here we are. So those are my recommendations. We're going to push the news back to later in the episode, because we want to get to Smallville Season 5, and we want to get to Zachy's thoughts. So, Zachy, what we're going to have you do is your general impressions on the season, and then we want you to highlight, if you will, some of your favorite episodes and some of your least favorite episodes. So start with general impressions on the season.
Well, sure. Thank you so much. For me, season 5 of Smallville was, it's a year of transition in the show. It's Clark moving out of his high school life and trying to figure out what it means to be an adult. But I think even on a meta level, the show itself was transitioning, because it was trying to figure out what the long game was going to be, now that the show was clearly successful and they were clearly going to go longer than 5 years, because I think when they started, that was sort of roughly the game plan. Like, oh, we'll do about 5 years. And so there's a little bit of the growing pains there, but I think what you see in year 5 is the seeds for the strongest aspects of what would come to define the show in later years. I mean, we see it really firmly become part of the DC universe. We get, Aquaman and Cyborg and Akrata, Lois Lane. I remember when I first heard Lois Lane was going to be on the show.
Yep.
I was like, what are you talking about? What are you kidding?
I was like, okay, here we go with the continuity scrub.
Exactly. Right. And I had, and so to be honest, it was the fifth year was a year of transition for me too, where I had to make that switch in my head where I was like, all right, Smallville is doing its own thing. It's doing its own version of the Superman origin. And I just need to recognize that this isn't going to end up being like any version of the story that I know. And that was helpful too, because I think I was able to just let go of that. Because by the way, for all the criticism initially in my head I had about Lois Lane, that evaporated the second I saw Erica Durant.
So
I just fell head over heels in love with her.
You're not alone, but it's for sure.
and honestly, I cannot imagine this show not having Lois in it, and I cannot imagine the kind of show it would have been. So I think that was a very smart decision. It was also consequential in my memory, because when I think of season 5, I think of the year that Jonathan Kent died. Mm. And I remember watching that episode. I remember watching that episode knowing in my head what was going to happen and still being just absolutely heartbroken when it did.
Yeah.
And I remember that was Reckoning, and the episode after that was Vengeance, and the very end of that episode when Clark is watching the video of his dad and just starts crying.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most poignant and beautiful moments in the entire series.
Agreed. Yeah.
I think it's tremendous. And so, there's hills and valleys, but on the whole, I didn't rewatch the whole season in prep for this, but I did go through certain episodes and I was just kind of going through, and I was like, at the time, I remember feeling like it dragged a little bit and there were parts that didn't go anywhere. But I overall had a much more positive impression of the show now. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is because I know I'm able to view season five as the pivot where this became, in essence, Metropolis. You know, so this year five is where the show turned.
Yeah.
And became, I think it was a very, very strong show in the second half, but it became a different show. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, it became a Superman show, full stop.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like you have two halves that are equally strong, but they're very different.
Yeah.
And so to me, year five is the pivot, and I think we have to view it that way. You know?
Yeah, agreed. I know you touched on some two episodes, but we're all like, what are some of your favorites, your strongest episodes from the season that left an impression, and why?
Well, okay, so Reckoning, like I said, that's definitely an important one. Aqua, I love.
Oh yeah.
I think it's sort of like when we think of Aquaman, there's always been the thing like, oh, he's a joke, he talks to fish or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like DC has for years always been trying to overcompensate for that. I feel like, to me, this episode was probably the first time that the character of Aquaman was exposed to a wide, wide audience. And
yeah.
I feel like a lot of people got to see, like, hey, man, this guy's a badass. He's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember initially being a little like, I was a little turned off by sort of the surfer dude persona.
Yeah, the bro. Every 5 seconds.
Yeah, now it's like, well, that's what he does in the movies anyway now.
Yeah.
But I really liked Alan Ritchson in the role. I like how, I mean, to me, that episode, I remember watching it the first time, was, first of all, there was a lot of, like, Lois in a bikini, and I'll admit that was...
Oh, yeah.
That was nice.
We're not going to cover that, in fact, that we are what we are. We're going to say
there's, like, a whole... There's, like, the whole episode, the one with... I forget the title, but it's the one with Tom Wopat, where it's like, yeah, we're just going to have Lois be a stripper. Like,
yeah, that was the one. It was called... hold on.
Explode.
Yeah, I haven't written that yet.
Explode, actually.
It's very apropos, the title.
But, no, watching Aqua, I liked it because it was the show being like, hey, we've got access to all these characters, why don't we use them? But it felt like, it felt like animated DC, or it felt like DC Comics Presents or something. You know, it really, it felt confident that, they were starting to finally move out of the, like, oh, we don't want to, like, no flights, no tights, we're embarrassed by being a superhero show. Finally, they were willing to be like, hey, we've been around for 5 years now, we can start doing that stuff. You know?
Yeah. I agree with that sentiment,
I love that episode, too. First off, we get a Clonicus in that episode, which is really nice, at Crater Lake. First of all, I love us reading Crater Lake. I think that's really cool that they, I like episodes, especially, like, a lot of the episodes, like, that take place at the beginning of the seasons, like, I think back to Heat, like, episodes that take place in the summer, at the beginning of the year, something about that really appeals to me. But one other thing I'll point out about this episode is that I think this is one of the first times we see Lex do something truly awful. I mean, the way he's torturing Arthur in this episode is just, I mean, it is brutal. And you just look at that, like, a lot of instances, like, Lex had done some shady stuff up to this point on the show. But a lot of it, like, you could almost say, like, a lot of it you could sort of kind of justify and be like, at least he had good intentions when he was doing it. And then here you see a moment where he's just, I mean, this is evil Lex right here, what he's doing on AC in this episode.
It's very much comic book like. This episode is one of the ones where we're getting comic book legs. Because before, you know, some of the stuff he did in past seasons, you can blame on his relationship with his father. As a culprit for it. But now it's like, okay, this has nothing to do with Lionel. This is all you. And just to echo Zachy's sentiments, when I heard they were bringing Aquaman on the show, I said, because at that point I hadn't read much Aquaman, so I'm like, how in the hell are they going to pull this off? You know, I had super friends in my head. I said, okay, they're going to have them ride a seahorse. What the hell? What are we going to do here? And then I saw it and I said, wait a minute. That's pretty. I mean, there was no. I mean, okay, there were tongue in cheek stuff, but it wasn't actively making fun of the character. Whereas other places I had seen him, they were poking fun at itself, kind of things, at certain times. So, but this one wasn't, which I liked. And
let's not forget the JLA, the Junior Lifeguard.
Yeah, that was. I love that reference. Right. I mean, that's a little cheesy, but I like it. So I'll let it go. But he played it with, Alan Richardson played it with seriousness. And you never, there's Jason Momoa, which you can't laugh at, but even Alan Richardson, you don't laugh at him, and he's wearing, an orange tank top and green shorts. And
Lois laughs at him.
Well, yeah, but Lois is Lois, and you gotta love her for just being the way she is, right?
The first of her three superhero boyfriends on the show.
Yes, yeah.
but the most short-lived of the three.
Yeah, well,
in terms of her relationship with them.
But I just, and you know, like his motive and the reasoning, you know, why he was so connected to the waters and marine life, you know, they gave us an explanation, and I just bought it, and I'm like, yep, I can believe this, I can go along with it. So I was very fond of that episode, like Zach was saying, and then, you know, you touched on Reckoning, so I guess we can.
Hold on.
Oh, you wanna? Okay, wait.
I was just gonna say I really liked Clark and Arthur sort of butting heads.
Like, yeah.
We saw that last season too when Clark met Bart, and they sort of butted heads at the beginning. But then like Clark, there's some of the awkward situations where Clark is like, he's very skeptical of AC. And like Lois getting really frustrated with him about it, like that. I just thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me, and I think we can all agree that what I like about the show is that when they brought in other heroes, is that yes, there was that, you know, conflict of ideologies, with most of the characters, but at the end of the day, each hero learned something and became a better person from interacting with the other. And I really like the way Smallville always did that. Clark getting kind of overprotective and if you will, a little bit jealous at the time, even though he was with Lana at the time or whatever, I thought it was, you know, sowing the seeds of what was to come with Lois and Clark. So yeah, like I said, Aqua, I agree with Zach as one that stands out, but, and then, you know, you mentioned Thirst. So let's go into it before we go anywhere else. But, I mean,
oh, yes.
Not Thirst. Sorry, I made a mistake. That's one of the worst episodes. We'll get to that. I meant.
That's
not
one of the worst.
It is. I meant. What did you reckon? What was it? Reckoning? You said that? That's what I meant.
Reckoning.
You know why? You know why I said Thirst? Because I was looking at IMDb for the name of the Lois as a stripper episode, and Thirst it showed up on my screen, and that's why it came to my head.
But it's not Thirst. It's Exposed. Is that?
No. But I'm saying that's why I mentioned Thirst, because it came in my. I saw it on the list, and it was stuck in my head.
Thirst is always on my mind.
Well, that's because you have a weird mind, sir. But Reckoning was just, you know, you were saying exactly that you knew what was happening, what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know,
yeah,
ripped out your heart. Because
yeah, it's, you know, they're like, before the episode aired, it's like, I mean, I hadn't read any spoilers, but it's like, oh, somebody close to Clark is going to die or something. It's going to be like, it's one of those defining Superman moments, I think. And it's like, okay, well, let's do the math here. Like, we know Lex isn't going to die. We know Lana's not going to die. We know which, even though at the time, you know, Jonathan Kent was alive in the comics, I was like, of all the people on Smallville, who is most likely to get shuffled off? It's going to be Jonathan, and it's going to suck because I absolutely adored John Schneider on this show. He was so good. And by the way, I truly feel like he left a void that was never really filled. I mean, you know, I think I don't think the show would have been worse had they left Jonathan alive. I think he really was an important part of it. So it broke my heart to see the character go.
Yeah, and you know, like you were saying, do the math, but you also see the way throughout the course of a little bit of last season and the beginning of this, you know, he's dealing with his heart issues. So
exactly,
you know, the writing was on the wall, and there was one episode, I can't remember which, previous where he was talking to Clark in you know, in his loft, and Clark said, he said something to the effect of, I'll always be here for you, but
right.
The end of the episode didn't end with any you know, nice, you know, soothing music. It ended with, you know, like a, almost like a bell, if you listen to the end of the episode, it's almost like a bell toll. And then a chilling silence, and I'm like, oh, that ain't good. and the fact that he said, I'll always be here for you, I'm like, okay, that's usually, when a character says that, that's never a good thing. And what I like about, well, not like, because you never just like seeing anybody die, or a character that you enjoy that, but the fact that they found a way, you know, one of the strengths of, I think, Smallville is they are able to take the core of the Richard Donner sensibilities, if you will, and modernize them. Because, you know, a lot of people say you can't do Donner in modern times. And I'm like, well, yes, you can. You can take your cues from it and adapt it and you know, update it for today's day and age or a modern audience. And I think Smallville was a perfect example of that. And, you know, the two death scenes were slightly different, but the effect was, you know, the fact that it happened on the barn and, you know, Clark was powerless to stop it and, you know, all that, it was all there. The DNA of the Donner death scene was all there. And it works. So Smallville proved that you can have the Donner spirit in a modern day Superman retelling. But this was, like I said, it was just, it was heartbreaking because again, they were both he and Martha were there. You know, but there was no coming back from this. You know, and the stress from you know, arguing with and battling with Lionel, that is a it adds a different element, because had that altercation not taken place, would that have changed things? We don't know, but it adds a different wrinkle to the proceedings. And
I like how they leave it ambiguous, and we don't find out till later what exactly the dispute was over, and we find out later that it's when Lionel revealed to Jonathan that he knew Clark's secret.
And you know, it's just like even before that, when it's sort of the Lana, the reveal, and you know, the reveal of his powers and the proposal, and then
yes!
And then her death scene.
Yes,
I loved it more for the, like, that was the second time I think we see Clark, quote unquote. I mean, it's leaping, but it's the closest we're going to get to flying. So just seeing him take off from the fortress like that with her, that was a cool moment. And then they managed to do the whole time travel thing without turning back, you know, without doing the let's rotate the earth. They found a way to do it. I'm like, all right, you didn't give him a new power. You didn't give, you know, there was no extra. It was because of, you know, technology in the fortress. I went with all of it. And I just thought some of the visuals in those early sequences were, you know, for the day and age that it was, I at the time, were probably pretty revolutionary for TV.
The beginning of this episode, I mean, as a Clonership.
Yeah, that's your cup of tea. This is your cup of tea.
It is my cup of tea, absolutely, yes. I adore it so much. Listen, I adore Reckoning as an episode as a whole, but I got to admit, it's a hard episode for me to watch.
Yeah.
Just how devastating it is. But, like, I am in pure joy watching the beginning of this episode, seeing, you know, Clark finally propose to Lana, reveal his secret. And then when Lana comes back and finally says yes, when she drives up and it's in the snow and it's such a happy moment, and she says, yes, I'll marry you, Clark. Because Clark is like, so is this going to be, are you going to let me down easy, or is this, yes, you're going to marry me? And she says, yes, I'll marry you, Clark. And it's just such a happy moment, you know, him taking her in his arms. And it's just, oh, I love it so much.
Yeah, I figure you like the first half of the episode specifically.
Yes, I mean, I love the whole episode, but yeah, especially the first half. Yes.
But it was, and then the funeral episode was just so, or the funeral portion of the episode was just, again, just so somber, so heartbreaking. And I think it's something that when you look back on it, we weren't used to with Smallville back in the day. Like, nothing had ever gotten that that somber. And
Well, the second half of this season is as dark as Smallville had gotten.
Yeah, like,
up to this point, like, by far.
Like, we're used to getting, you know, end of the world stakes at the end of the of each season, but this was a more personal, you know, sort of end of Clark's world as he knew it kind of thing, and it's something he couldn't use his powers to battle against. And I thought it was again, the music choices, everything. I thought it was an immensely powerful episode. So it's no wonder you called it out as one of your top, Zachy. But I think if you go across the board, no matter what people you think about Smallville, which seasons are their favorites, I think this will be unanimously, if you did a top 10, you know, of the series, I think this would unanimously be near the top of the pile for everybody, I think.
Yeah.
But are there any other ones?
you spoke to the music. I love the use. Yes, there's the song I Grieve, but for me, I love You're Beautiful by James Blunt that plays in the episode, too. And
yeah.
Just, oh, I love
that. That was when the song was relatively new, and then the radio ruined it by overplaying.
And they kind of overplayed it.
Yeah, but
I still love that song.
Yeah, but it's like, now it's like, all right, we got it.
Definitely, an episode, though, worthy of being the 100th episode.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that the loss of Jonathan as a marker, I think it's a great halfway point marker for this show. I mean, I think it works for the overall story that they were telling, you know, because the journey into Clark's ultimate adulthood has to be at least part of that has to be where he loses his grounding, you know, the person who because. One thing I've said all along is what Schneider did so well was you can see in him the man that Clark will become.
Mm-hmm.
You can see he is the father of a Superman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, it's total tangent to this, but about 10 years ago, I met John Schneider. He appeared at a convention here, and I had at the time the show was still on the air, but I had my oldest with me who. I mean, now he's 11, but at the time he was one. I had a little stroller, and I was taking him around, and I met John Schneider, shook his hand, chatted with him really briefly. And this is like a smaller concert. It wasn't like a big line.
Mm.
And I told him, I said, you know, I look at Jonathan as the kind of parent, dad I want to be for him. I look at Jonathan as an example. And he was visibly moved by that. John Schneider
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
You know, and I think and I meant it when I said that, you know. I mean, I look at that and I'm like, I would love if that was the kind of dad I could be. And I, by the way, it's been 11 years now that I've been a dad, and I wish I was as good a dad as Jonathan. You know, it's hard.
Well, you try. I can imagine. I'm the closest I am is an uncle. So, but even with that, I'm like, okay, I got to check myself and be better for these kids. It's, you're right. He was. I mean, if that isn't the fathering 101, material, I don't know what is. It's like you know, like those educational tapes where, you know, they make you watch at school. That's the fathering 101. So I would agree with you in that sentiment.
He's probably the greatest fictional father of all time, and it's particularly the Smallville version of Jonathan Kent. He it's amazing what John Schneider did in that role. Like, seriously.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Are
there any other episodes that specifically that you thought were top notch?
Episodes that jumped out to me. I liked Cyborg again, just because we're bringing in another character. I wish they had the money to make Victor look like, you know, the Cyborg that we know.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I kind of wish they had modern day CW effects money. Because
it was.
I think it was so brilliant how they got around that, though. Like the way I thought it was very creative.
It was back then, but
I didn't mind it when I watched. I wasn't like, oh, this sucks. But you know, I think to Adam's point, you look at it now where you're like, oh, well, if the show was made now, he would for sure look like a version of Cyborg from the comics.
Yeah,
we're gonna see him on Doom Patrol.
Yeah,
so
which is exciting.
There you go.
Curious to see what he looks like on there.
Overall, because we haven't really mentioned him, but I liked the whole Brainiac arc.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that next.
Well, hold on. I don't want to move on from Cyborg quite yet. I do want to get to the Brainiac, but if we could just talk about Cyborg.
Sure, yeah.
Sure.
Because you brought that up. But first of all, I want to point out Caroline Dries was the writer of that episode, and she's going to be writing Batwoman. We talked about this on our news, I think, last episode.
Well, that's a great sign for me then.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I listed off all her Smallville credits when we talked about that news. But yes, very exciting. And so I thought I'd point out that was one of the episodes that she wrote. But also, Mackenzie Gray is in that episode as the scientist that Lex is working with. And he of course has a bunch of DC credit. He's on Smallville later as one of the Lex clones.
As the older one, right? Yeah, I think.
Yeah, as the older one. And then he's also in Man of Steel. So I thought I would point that out. Yeah,
he's just a DC. He's just the traveling circus of DC characters. Just, you can do a one-man show in Vegas.
Guys, when it comes to Cyborg, worth pointing out that Smallville is the first time he was part of the Justice League. Like, we take for granted. I mean, he was part of the Superpowers show, but, like, nowadays it's like, oh, Cyborg, Justice League. But it started on Smallville.
That's right. Yeah. You're right. Good call. Good call.
Because this was 5 years before the New 52 when they made him a founding member. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Yep.
Yeah, good call. Good call.
Overall, like I said, I just briefly talking about the Brainiac arc. I love James Marsters.
Yeah. Spike. Hands up if you know him as Spike.
Yeah, and I think the smart thing that they did is. You know, when the season starts, he's just Professor Fine. So you, like, if you read the comics, you know Milton Fine is one of Brainiac's aliases, but you don't know his deal. And I like that they kept it close to the chest. Mm-hmm. But I like the way they wove it in. I love that, you know, Brain interactive construct. It's brilliant. Like, it's such a perfect way to, because the name is goofy if you think about it, because that's like an insult. You're like, hey, what do you think you are? Some kind of Brainiac?
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that the show found a way to be like, no, this is what it stands for. And you look at it, you're like, oh, okay, that works. And it almost feels like that's just part of the, you know, we've adopted that. Even though Brainiac being Kryptonian came from the animated show, Smallville carried it forward. Now, you know, that's something that many versions now. I don't know, actually, on Krypton. He's not Kryptonian on Krypton, right?
I believe he's Kaluan.
He is Colin. Okay. Yeah, but I like that Smallville found a way. So essentially, they used the DNA of the animated series, and they did it in a way that fit the Smallville verse. Mm-hmm. You know, it worked.
And the way you said, like you said, it incorporated the one of his pre-crisis aliases, Milton Fine, with the more alien, you know, kind of nature that we know him from modern day comics, and like you said, the animated series. So. It was a good balancing act juggling his history.
Can't go wrong with James Marsters.
Oh, he's incredible. I call him out, and of course for being for Buffy, because that was my high school years right there.
He was also Lex in Superman Doomsday.
That's right.
Yes, but he's also on the Runaways, the Marvel show, which is actually quite good. I know, you know, it's a DC show, but I recommend Runaways. the Hulu show, so check that out if you haven't.
I love James Marsters as Brainiac too. In fact, he's probably I go back and forth on this a little bit, but I would have to say right now I feel like I said, it's close, but I would say he's probably my favorite non-Luther villain of Smallville.
Okay,
so
I'd go along with that.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah. That's a fair point.
But I love that, and I love how, like, one of the things I love about this season, particularly the first half of the season so much, is the stuff with Clark and Lana and Chloe in college. And so I love all the Milton Fine stuff, like seeing Clark in class. I really like that. And I mean, I'm gonna get way more in depth about Thirst later, but
this is the 1 year he took an actual class where they actually showed him attending a college class.
And burned down the projector.
No, I'm saying in college.
Oh, in college. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, he's only in college this season.
That's true, yeah.
So there would be only one season where he took a class.
Good point.
But there's some great stuff. There's this one scene in Thirst that really stands out to me where Milton Fine's talking about Lex Luthor, and then Lex comes into the room, and Lex is like, basically all the machinations between Lex, there's a lot of it in Thirst, actually. The dynamic between Lex and Brainiac, I really found the way Michael Rosenbaum and James Marsters played off each other this season, it's really, really good.
Yeah, whenever those two would interact, they would always be good quality scenes.
That scene where Milton Fine in particular, he's teaching the class and he's like condemning what Lex is doing, and Lex is there in the room, and it's such a good scene.
And you know what I think was interesting was the fact that, like, you mentioned it, Zach, about them keeping his motivations close to the vest, and for a period, you know, as just a purely, let's say, Smallville viewer who didn't have any knowledge of what Milton Fine was in the or what that meant in the comics.
Yeah.
You didn't know whether, like, you had no idea what was coming about the sort of, you know, you flip-flopped as to, okay, is he on Clark's side or is he not? Like there was a period of, if you didn't know the comics, you wouldn't really be tipped off one way or the other. You'd be guessing, and I think they did that quite well. Now I knew who it was, so it wasn't a surprise to me. But I'm saying for the non-comic readers, that would have been a surprise. So they did well
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Any other episodes or
that's true, because there's the episode Solitude where he's like helping
Martha, yeah,
where he's sort of being benevolent. And there's even in Thirst as well, I'll point out, he's being benevolent. Like he's the one who reveals to Clark to go to Lex. He's like ask him about this project that was doing with the vampire bats, and so ask him about what happened with that incident.
Yeah.
And so he's helping Clark for some of this season. So yeah, you're right. You're very much right about that. I agree.
Yeah. What other things that were positive for you, Zachy, that maybe stood out?
There was another episode which I'm struggling with the name, but it's the plot with Chloe having to deal with Carrie Fisher as Pauline Kahn.
That's Thirst.
Yeah, that was Thirst. Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
There were some moments.
The thing I like in that episode. You know what's funny, Jordan, is as I was going through it, I was like, I do not like this episode, but I know Jordan will love it. Like that was in my head.
Everybody knows Jordan.
I know you pretty well.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
It's like I don't like this, but Jordan will love it.
But yeah, no, especially now that Carrie Fisher's gone, obviously, it's like there's an extra poignancy in just seeing her in anything. But clearly the character is named in honor of Jeanette Kahn, who was, mm-hmm. you know, so important in DC publishing history. So there's extra yes. layers that I appreciated there. There's another, you know, unfortunately, I'm watching these episodes now under the shadow of, like, Alice and Mac just going crazy pants. So there's that extra, like,
it's
damn.
Weird.
Like,
it's weird, yeah.
I remember thinking Chloe was so cute and everything back in the day, and I loved the character, and I loved her, and then it's like, you hear all this stuff, and it can't help but taint that a little bit.
It gets worse in season six, when you because I'm starting my rewatch, and when you see her with Jim, it's like, oh boy, I wonder if he was part of any shenanigans.
Oh, sure,
I don't know.
So that's kind of nuts. But, yeah, that episode stuck out to me. And then, you know, I mentioned Vengeance. I would say the episode itself.
Oh, no, we can't skip over Thirst that quickly.
Okay, I'm going to get this out of the way now. The core of the whole, you know, vampire portion of it was not my thing. The vampire sorority,
yeah,
no.
I'll co-sign that. Yeah.
Like, you want to do vampires, give me Buffy any day of the week. None of this homage/parody of Buffy. Or whatever they're
right.
going for. But there were moments, I'll give this to you, Jordan, and that's all I'm going to give to you. There were moments like the ones that, you know, Zaggy was mentioning with, of course, Carrie Fisher, because she's great. And whatever Allison Mack is up to now, her acting on the show, you can't deny it was pretty solid. So give her that stuff. So the interplay between the two of them was great. Milton Fahn and Lex Luthor, great stuff. So I appreciate that. So it was with the benefit of fast forward. This episode improves, but so maybe if what do you think, Zach? Maybe about 10 minutes is 10-15 minutes is quality. The rest, I would say, I could just fast forward this. But go ahead, Jordan. Spill your guts. Tell us how much you love this zany episode.
It is, and people think I'm crazy for saying.
Oh, you are, but that's besides the point.
It is my third favorite episode of the entire series. I adore this episode so much. I just find it is one of the most just purely entertaining hours of television I've watched in my entire life. Like the whole vampire stuff, it's so corny, but it's so entertaining. I mean, the scenes with okay, first of all, the scene where the guy shows up, the pizza delivery guy, is just hilarious, and he's like, oh, I guess I could stay a few more minutes, and he's like slacking off on the job, and then he winds up getting attacked by the vampires, and you know, just the way the episode is formatted with Chloe's with her voiceover about you know, the article she's writing about it is just great. And there's some great, amazing Klonna stuff in the scene. In this episode, including my favorite part is the scene at the end of the episode where we get a Klonna kiss, and there's a scene where they're talking, and Lana talks about how close she felt to him when she bit him, and how she felt this strength and this power, and his love for her. And I just, it's just, It's a beautiful, beautiful Klaana scene that I really liked. It just made me so happy. And just what this episode, like I said, I really love the aspect of the characters being in college at the beginning of season 5. And this episode is probably the episode where we get the most of that, where we get the most time of them at Metropolis University. So I really enjoyed that. It's just I just have so much fun watching this episode. It's just I love it. I love it so much.
And now we kind of sort of know why. It's 90% Clark and Lana content and 10% vampire stuff. But Jordan, I will make this recommendation. If you want to watch a good vampire show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Get some Netflix or Hulu or wherever it is, or go old school and buy some.
Jordan, you've never seen it?
No, I've never.
No, he's too young for Buffy.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, it seems like that show would be right up your.
I think you'd like it, and then I would have more respect for your opinion if you countered this with Buffy talk, then I would maybe allow it.
And Brainiac's in it, right?
Right. I think you should check it. I think Zach is right. I think you'll like it. I really do.
I mean, the Smallville is indebted to Buffy, so it's almost like you watch Buffy, you're gonna see a lot of where Smallville took its early inspiration from.
So that's another recommendation.
Well,
for you.
I love early Smallville, so yeah. That bodes well for.
And Sarah Michelle Gellar back in those days, that was like, again, high school.
And I had such a crush.
Zachy, I think, like I said, I think in some universe we're related. An alternate universe. I think we may be related because our theory, our opinions line up, especially where Lois Lane and Buffy
seriously,
are concerned.
I mean, Jordan, yeah. I mean, Buffy and Angel, both of those. If you like Smallville, I see no reason why you wouldn't like both.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you would. And if you come out not liking either Buffy or Angel, I think you're fired. That'll be the tipping point, sir. But Zachy keeps mentioning, I think it's Vengeance. So let's let you talk about that for a bit. What is your...
So Vengeance, the episode, I was kind of hot and cold on, other than the subplot about Clark dealing with Jonathan's death. I wasn't crazy about him being like, oh, look, here's somebody who wears glasses, and they're hiding their identity. And,
that was the girl, the AccuView, AccuView girl, where she had the contact. Yeah. The contact lens, yeah, that's right. Okay, I do like the ending and the whole subplot with the watch.
Yes,
I get that the glasses thing was a bit on the nose and kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of thing.
Yeah,
but I do kind of like the aspect of the fact that you have this vigilante. It was sort of like, how do we do a Batman character without being allowed to do Batman?
And we get that Batman 89 theme in this episode.
There was a bit of it. I heard, maybe it was just my ears or my cell phone.
No, it's definitely there.
Okay, so it was there, okay. There. I can never tell because that's my cell phone ring. So when my cell phone goes off, I'm like, oh, Batman must be on. And then that's like, oh, crap. It's my phone. Damn it, I better answer the phone. So there was the element of the fact that it had some, it was like a prototypical Batman / Batgirl that I'm like, all right. It may not be, the highest of quality, but I enjoy it on that level. And seeing Clark, and what is her name? Something Rojas, Angela, Andrea.
Rojas.
Yeah.
The character is a Crado.
And so
she's on the show. She's Angel of Vengeance. She's the Angel of Vengeance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but seeing
she just called her Warrior Angel.
I'm surprised that they didn't do some sort of alternate timeline episode with Warrior Angel as an actual living, breathing superhero. That feels kind of like a missed opportunity. But anyway.
Well, they sort of.
Yeah, where they were filming the movie. Yeah, I get. Yeah, that was kind of cute. Yeah. But what I think got me about the Vengeance was the fact that, at the beginning, their ideologies clash, and it is kind of like a conversation that you could see Superman having with Batman, saying, you shouldn't, this is not how we do things. And so that whole aspect of it I enjoyed. So you're right, there are moments where I'm like, really? But then there are moments where, I dig this. So I am 50-50 on it. That was a middle of the road episode for me.
I love that episode. And the final scene of this episode, every single time I'm just bawling.
Oh yeah,
that scene. I mean, when Jonathan turns around and waves goodbye, I mean, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and then it's the freeze frame, like the freeze frame on it was just. Yeah. I'm like, you guys are killing me. Like why are you doing this to me?
And 10 years later.
Honestly,
that up to that time, probably the strongest acting Tom Welling ever did on that show.
I would agree.
You know, I mean, he was always solid on the show, but that I think what was asked of him in that scene in particular really cemented that he was the real deal. You know,
yeah, I would agree with that.
And if you've ever had a like, this will hit like no matter what. You know, I hate when people say, "Well, you can't relate to a character like Superman." Anybody who's ever lost a relative in such an unexpected sort of fashion, the way Clark lost Jonathan. You watch those two episodes, Vengeance and you know the 100th. You tell me you can't relate to Clark Kent. You must not have a heart.
Yeah.
So don't give me that you can't relate to this character, because in those moments I'm like, you know, forget about the powers, forget about all that. It's the human emotion that grips you. So. You're right. That ending of that episode was just, and I think it was coming. I think that was not the preceding episode, like the right after the 100th. Am I getting my
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
right.
It was right after.
Okay. So yeah. It's so right after Jonathan. It really does pack it. Like it is a kick to the stomach. Like that moment, it really, it's so powerful.
And I'll point out, it's directed by Jeannot Swart.
Right. Supergirl.
Butchering, but yeah, the Supergirl director who did a lot of Smallville episodes.
Yeah.
He also did Jaws too, which is not nearly as bad as the other Jaws.
Yeah, I think that gets lumped in with
it does
with all the other ones. But you know what? One that I really want to bring up and get your thoughts on, both of you, is Lexmas, which is the first sort of holiday episode, the Christmas episode Smallville had done.
First of two, yeah.
Yeah. What were you guys' thoughts on that, Zachy? What did you think of that episode?
You know, it's any time we get to focus in on Michael Rosenbaum as Lex is it's always a joy, especially because he didn't, you know, he wasn't there for the whole run of the show. So when I watch older episodes, I'm always like, God, he was so good. You know, he's like, I mean, seriously, like they could have done entire episodes that didn't even have Clark, and it would have still been fascinating.
Oh,
you know, like, I would have loved, in hindsight, I would have loved, like, you know, there's that miniseries, Lex Luthor, Man of Steel, by I think Brian Azzarello.
Yes, it's a great book. Oh, man.
You know, and if they did, like, episodes like that with Rosenbaum in it, oh, my gosh, he would have just killed it, you know?
Why can't the DC streaming service take these kind of Elseworlds and make, like, miniseries out of them?
Maybe they will.
Well, they can. I mean, the
do it.
They haven't yet is because they haven't launched yet.
Yeah, but do somebody.
So we don't know.
I'll tell you. I mean, if this Joker movie does well, you're gonna see more stuff like that.
But man, you got me off on a tangent. I can't. Joaquin Phoenix and the Joker. That sentence is magical to me. But anyway.
We'll be talking about that a little bit in our news.
Yeah. Just saying those two words, or those, I guess three: Joaquin Phoenix and then Joker. In the same sentence, I'm like, really, that's happening? What world am I living on? And am I dreaming? Because if I am, don't wake me up.
I think that Lex, the genius of the way Smallville designed Lex, is that we start out just liking him so much.
Yeah.
And it, you know, we know where his story has to end, so every step towards his fall feels like just a cliff, you know. And I think Lexmas is a great episode in that you know, it's all about the what might have been, you know.
And it's
the biggest turning point, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially the decision he makes at the end.
Since you bring it up, I was gonna wait, but since you bring it up, is it cool if I bring this?
Yeah, bring it. Usually, if you remember the quote, throw it out there. Whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll bring up the first quote I want to bring up from the end is when he says to Lionel, he says, "How dare you play God with my life?" That is I brought up, I've said before how I think the scene between them in Memoria is their best scene, the best Lionel Lex scene in the entirety of the show. But this one is up there for me as well. Like, yeah. The way Rosenbaum delivers that line and the way Johnny Glover plays it in that scene, reacting to it too, it's just, oh, it's so good. It gives me chills every time.
Yeah.
But then his scene with Griff at the end, and I got to shout out Griff because he's played by Adrian Holmes, who plays one of the Kryptonians in season 9 as well, and he plays the lieutenant on Arrow.
Gotta love the CW and their double and triple duty actors. <Yeah. laughs>
There's a lot of it, and actually we'll be talking about that later in our new segment too. The scene between Lex and Griff when he talks about the key to happiness being money and power. And it's just like that's the turning point there. That's the turning point.
Yeah.
And it's when he's looking out the window and they're playing Carol of the Bells and he's, oh my goodness, it gives me chills. I mean, just down my spine, like I'm just like shivering during that scene because it's so powerful.
And I'm and again, that's called to mind so many images of, you know, Lex staring out a window is this iconic, you know, thing in Superman mythology. And it was that. So anytime I see that, I'm like, all right, you got, like, I'm an easy mark. Like, they can just give me full scenes and I'm there. And this is one of them. But the reason I like this episode is because it's kind of like a sort of twisted, it ends on the reverse, but it's kind of like a twisted version of a bizarro version of, you know, the Ebenezer Scrooge story, if you will. And, and that's one of my favorite, you know, stories of all time. So seeing a version of that, albeit an upside down version, appeals to me, especially with Michael Rosenbaum.
Be why you share my love of Batman Noel so much.
but it's also the art. Have you read that, Zachy?
I have not.
That should definitely. Zachy, it's so good. If you like the Ebenezer Scrooge story, and I know you like Batman, you like really good art, I recommend picking that up.
Who drew that?
Lee Bermejo. Oh. Yeah.
Who did he did Lex Luthor? Man,
yes, too. Yes. The art is phenomenal. This episode, I really appreciate it. And, you know, the little bit, I think, with Clark helping out Santa Claus was another sort of callback to the comics. Because, Zachy, you'd know better than me, this person. Didn't they have an issue where Superman, it was around Christmas time, I can't remember what year it was, but he answered Santa Claus's letter and delivered the presents to the kids, I think.
Yeah. It's an issue called Metropolis Mailbag. It was Adventures of Superman. It would have been like 91 or 92.
Yeah.
It was by Dan Jurgens.
So that was cute. I thought that was a nice little moment, you know, aside from everything else that was going on. The only kind of weird thing for me about this episode, and it's still weird, even though we get about, you know, a season and a half of it or whatever it is. Lex and Lana just disturbed. Like, look, I was never. I'm not where Jordan is with this Lana thing. Nowhere close. if I have to use one of these ridiculous ship names, give me close nine times out of ten. Seeing Lex and Lana together is borderline nauseating. It just I can't. It's like every time I'm like, no, please just turn my eyes away. Let the scene play out. Or thank God, benefit of fast forward, but you can't because, you know, in later seasons, it's an integral part of the plot, so you can't fast forward. But so that was a little disturbing. It was disturbing the first time I saw it live, and it's just as disturbing in the rewatch.
Here's the thing that, listen, I, as a Klana shipper, like, I'm predisposed to obviously not be, you know, be the biggest fan of
right,
that.
Yeah.
But what I'll say is this, because this plays into obviously the whole storyline with that. It actually started. It was teased last season when Lex actually, you know, came on to Lana at the end of last season. So that's actually when they first, I feel like, teased something with Lex and Lana. But then it continues here, obviously, this season. It gets ramped up at the end of the season, going into next season where it's full force. Here's what I'll say about it, and the reason that it's hard for me to watch as a Klana shipper, but the reason that I actually think that at the end of the day it is a good story is because it it's an example of Lex, and this is what he tries to do sort of at the end of this season, going into season six. He's trying to take everything from Clark, and he's like, this is like an attack on Clark. His relationship with Lana, it reinforces him as a villain, and I think it's honestly one of the most evil things Lex ever does. And there's a scene in a later episode this season where Clark asks Lex, he's like, all the way back in season one? Well, he doesn't say season one, obviously. It doesn't get like meta like that. But he's like, so did you always just want to have Lana for yourself? And it's really interesting to think back on season one, and to think when Lex was a Klonna shipper and see back in season one.
Yeah, he was one of you guys, which was also kind of disturbing. But
it's so crazy to think how far things have come. Like, it reinforces how far gone Clark and Lex's friendship has gone.
Okay, sure. On that aspect, I'll give it to you, but it's still disturbing to watch play out.
No, it is disturbing.
Just because you got to imagine he's, what, a decade older than they are?
He's not a decade. Wow. He's not a decade older. Wow. I think he's like 5 years older.
Yeah, wow. There's, all right.
But there's another moment with Lex that I really want to point out in this episode. Let's see. Lex was born in 1980 in the show's continuity.
Okay.
I'm looking it up now. Lex was born in 1980, and let's see. So I think the characters in the show, because if the meteor shower, if they're supposed to be how old when the meteor shower
wasn't happened, it 88? Wasn't it 88? I think
it was 89.
Oh, was it? All right.
So,
hey, the year Batman came out.
Yeah. So if they're supposed to be how old in 1989 when the meteor shower happened, I mean, look at Lana in that. How old do you think Lana is in that scene in the pilot? The young Lana.
I don't know. Four or five,
yeah,
six.
Yeah, so I guess so. He's only like 5 years.
Okay, old. Fair enough. Yeah.
But anyway, the scene I really want to point out is the scene between Jonathan and Lex in Lex's vision, where Jonathan says to Lex, he says, "You're like a." He says something. This is not verbatim, but he says something to the effect of, "You're like a son to me."
Mm.
And it's basically Lex. That's what he's always wanted. He's wanted a father. He wanted a father who loves him, unlike Lionel. And it's like, one thing I've always said about his journey on the show is that he always wanted Lionel to love him, and Lionel never did. And what wound up happening was then he tried to gain Jonathan's acceptance and love, and he never was able to get that. But not only was he never able to get that, but Lionel became more of a father to Clark than he ever was to Lex.
It does kind of mirror that. The vision of it does mirror what would happen with sort of Clark and Lionel. So I'll give you that. One of the funny things, I know we brought up Milton Fine, but the fact that one of the things we didn't bring up was, and I thought this was kind of very chilling to watch play out, especially until you realize what's happening, was in the episode Oracle, where he's using the form of Jonathan Kent to try and convince Clark and then later Martha to kill Lex, right?
To kill Lionel. Another episode written by Caroline Dries, by the way.
Yeah, because during the episode, I'm like, well, what's going on here? Because at first I didn't put two and two together, and I'm like, so what's really happening here? So that was a cool fake out that they fooled me on. Because obviously I knew it wasn't Jonathan, but I'm like, the ghost of Jonathan, you know, because of what happened with them in Reckoning. But so that was interesting. That was an interesting aspect of that episode that I appreciated. Before we get to some of the ones maybe you didn't like, Zaki, I want to touch on Vessel, which was the season finale. Just an aside, this was the one where sort of was this the one where which was okay? Maybe I'm getting my episodes wrong. Which was the one where the fortress starts going all that, like that pink purpley color, and Zod's coming through the portal, or is about to come through the portal?
Yeah.
Is this the episode we're talking about? Because
where Zod needs a vessel.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I distinctly remember that the big sort of hook when I was watching this live, you know, years ago, was that they were going to show the first teaser trailer for Superman Returns, and they showed it with this episode. Even now, during my rewatch, I remembered in my head, I'm like, oh my God, this was the first time we saw anything from Superman Returns. So it just brought back memories. But anyway,
this was May of 06, so there would have already been, like, we saw probably, like, the last full trailer.
Yeah, that's what it was, sorry.
Right, because the movie came out, like, the next month.
So yeah, it was the last full trailer.
Yeah.
But I just remember them showing, I remember it being tied with something related to Superman Returns. And that memory just stuck out of my head, but.
Have you guys ever heard Michael Rosenbaum talk about how they got him playing Zod in this episode?
No.
He has told, I would butcher the story. It's much funnier. I can't remember where he's talked about it, but I've heard him talk about it multiple times. Like when they would have him up, when they had him flying, and how awkward it was and difficult for him when they had him on the ropes or whatever, so that he could fly as Zod, and that it was very hard for him to do. So anyway, he's told some really funny stories about that. That just in retrospect, I always think of when I watch this episode, I always think about that.
And I thought it was it was almost like, again, that was another, I think, you know, and this will go into next season, but I think being possessed by Zod and having that taste of like, into a degree, ultimate power, I think is another tipping point along with Lexmas for Lex.
And it ties into Lexmas. Power.
Yeah.
That's part of his line at the end of the episode. Money and power are the key to happiness.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, there you go.
And so, and just the way at the, I remember sort of the mini fight that he and Lex have in the barn, mm-hmm. or he and Lex slash Zod. I have to clarify that because it's so quickly. I thought that was very...
It's not as difficult as when we were trying to explain Erica Durant's, who she was playing in the Midvale episode of Supergirl. And it's like, she's playing in the formal Allura.
Yeah.
She's playing John Jones, pretending to be Agent Noelle Neal. Oh, my goodness.
Still Smallville's Lois Lane. So on top of all
exactly,
that was a headache for sure.
That's the most
yeah.
difficult situation I've ever had of having to describe something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But it's that fight had a two-pronged effect for me, because one, it was a face-off of Super or Clark and Lex, but at the same time, it was Clark's first interaction with Zod on this show. So for me, it was like, okay, we're like his most two recognizable villains in, let's say, quote-unquote pop culture for the mass audience. We're getting two for the price of one here, and
yeah.
I've always applauded Smallville for how they handled, you know, the stakes and making their premieres and finales be these, you know, the most over word used in history, epic sort of events kind of thing. And this...
Well, here the word epic is justified. I don't care. It is epic.
And you know what? When I saw them deploy the Phantom Zone, and then, you know, Clark gets trapped in it. I had always thought, well, how would they do that on like when Smallville's on? I said, if they ever get to that, how would they handle it? And you know what? Yeah, you know, it's obviously a nod to the Donner version, but I think it works. I thought well, this might look in modern day. I don't know how this is gonna go. But it worked to me. I bought it. How did you guys feel about that? And what did you think of Zaki and Jordan? What did you guys think of how, at least in these initial stages, how Lex or Michael Rosenbaum embodied playing a version of General Zod?
I have few complaints about any of the choices that Michael Rosenbaum made on this show. I mm-hmm. think, given that they at this time they didn't know what Zod would actually end up being like, you know, and it was essentially a wide open field. So I like that he kind of did his own thing with it, but it felt like, you know, it didn't feel like Rosenbaum was playing Lex.
Mm.
Like, I like that it felt like he was somebody different. I think that was a clever way to do it. And mm-hmm. and I also just picking up on what you were saying, I like the ways in which the show gradually incorporated elements of the Richard Donner movie, you know, so starting with the fortress and then bringing in the Phantom Zone and stuff. And that's sort of the visual style and iconography from that film in particular, because certainly when the show started, it stayed away from that, but it moved more heavily towards that. Mm. You know, maybe because of Superman Returns, now that I think about it, because since Superman Returns was really bear hugging that stuff.
Yeah, I think it was, they were trying to create synergy, because if you look at the Daily Planet, it's almost... not identical, but it's
very similar.
You could believe it was the same universe if you strained your brain long enough. You'd be like, all right, I can fit that. I have done. I've kind of sort of tried to fit Superman, you know, the Donner years and Smallville and Superman Returns. I've tried to create a headcanon where it all fits together. I don't know if it makes sense. I'll have to tell you guys one day, but I've tried to do it. I spend way too much time actually thinking about that, but that's another. It's neither here nor there, but yeah, it's and you mentioned, we didn't talk about it, but I think season 5 opened up with the creation of the fortress, did it not? And looking at it now, yes, by comparison to something like The Flash or Legends of Tomorrow or even Supergirl, the effects look more CGI than you know, more obvious CGI, if you will, than what we see now. But again, I have to go back to 2006 television, if you put yourself in that mind space, it looks pretty damn good. And the fact that when he created the fortress in Superman the movie, it's essentially pretty much, you know, you get, it goes to black, then it brightens up, and you see that fading back and forth, and then the fortress kind of appears. Here we actually see more of the formation of the fortress. So I thought that was a nice expansion of what Donner had done. It was like expanding on the, you know, it was almost like an extended kind of, again, it's in its own little world, an extended scene, if you will, kind of. You know.
And since you're going back to the premiere, I think that I want to touch on two things that just are sort of overall things this season that sort of started there, which are one, the second meteor shower. Mm. I think that's such a brilliant way of them having more, getting more villains for Clark to fight. I mean, because we obviously had all the meteor freaks through the first four seasons.
How many meteor freaks, how many showers were there in this series, meteor showers?
Well, there's two.
Okay.
There's two, but because there's this one, but then they do it again in season 6 by giving it's not a meteor shower, but with the zoners. And so it's just Smallville was able to find these creative ways to be able to get more villains, and the Flash has done the same thing. The Flash had the original particle accelerator.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah.
One, and then in season 4 they had the bus metas. So it's like I feel like the Flash, and I think I mentioned this in our Flash review, that I felt like Flash was taking cues from Smallville and how they were able to keep getting more weekly villains for the heroes to fight. And I feel like anyway, I really love how Smallville did that. And I also, this is the first season where, well, she found out in season 4, but Chloe knowing Clark's secret was awesome.
Yeah,
so many great, you know, because obviously at this point, Pete's no longer on the show. So he no longer knows. So there's no, so in season 4, other than Chloe, but she found out later in the season and Clark didn't know she knew. So in season 4, Clark didn't have anybody other than his parents to confide in about a secret. Now he does in season 5.
And that was a different dynamic.
What's that?
It added a different dynamic to the show and sort of kind of gave him somebody else to talk to now that Jonathan was, you know, about his powers and stuff. Now that Jonathan was, I mean, he could have obviously gone to Martha, but she was kind of busy being, you know, senator. So he needed somebody more, you know, closer to home on a constant basis. So, and I did like his dynamic with Chloe when he doesn't have to make excuses to her every single time. So,
although she does wish that he would slow down before zooming into the room.
That was a funny bit. I will agree. And we know, you know, I did want to do this, but Zaki brought up the whole Allison Mack thing. We know she's gonna keep you secrets, so you know she's. I'm just gonna leave it at that. But the other interesting one was, you know, it's we didn't touch on it at all, but What did you guys think of Mortal, where
I was gonna bring that up. That's one of my absolute favorite episodes of the season. I hadn't brought it up yet because I hadn't gotten to my favorites yet.
Where Clark was a human, because Jor-El was punishing him and took his power.
This is a favorite of mine for all the Klonoa stuff.
Yeah, I knew that was gonna be the case.
Oh my goodness, I adore this episode so much. First of all, the beginning of the episode, they're rebuilding from the second meteor shower, and Clark and Lana. The scene with them in the field, it's just so sweet seeing them together in the field, running off. They go back to the barn, and actually, in this episode, they make love for the first time, which is a very exciting Klonoa milestone there. So, I love this episode. And of course, at the beginning, there's that scene with them on the couch and they get interrupted. But then at the end of the episode, the beautiful scene at the end at the Talon, which is just, oh my goodness, all the Klonoa stuff in this episode.
You were in heaven in this episode. Yeah.
What's that?
You were in heaven in this episode.
Was in heaven.
I can imagine.
You're absolutely right about that. Yes, it is. Oh my goodness, I adore this episode. And it's written by Stephen S. DeKnight, which is another reason why I love him so much, because he wrote this one. And he wrote Thirst, so it's like he's written so many of my favorites.
Thank God I know what he's done outside of this, because if you had mentioned Thirst and his name, I'd be like, do I really want to watch what else this guy's done? But then, he's done some other things that I do appreciate, so I will. I will say that for him.
But I also say this is another episode where we see Clark and Chloe, their new dynamic working together, because Chloe, I think it's so cool seeing them break into they're not breaking into Belle Reve. They escape, the villains of this episode escape from Belle Reve, but they're breaking into Luther Corp.
Yes.
And that whole sort of heist scene, if you will, between Clark and Chloe, and Chloe knowing his powers, there's so many fun moments in that. So I really enjoyed that. But yeah, ultimately, oh my goodness, one of the best Klonoa episodes of the whole series. I mean, just, oh my goodness.
Did you?
Clark, my favorite line is Clark telling Lana, it's only been you, Lana. And oh my goodness.
For temporary. But anyway, Zachy, what did you think of the whole, not the Klonoa stuff, but Clark having to adapt?
Can talk about the Klonoa stuff.
Well, I know. Zachy is a sane individual, and he ships the right couple when it comes to Superman lore. But anyway, what did you think of the aspect of Clark having to adapt to being powerless and being sort of?
I think it's great. I think that kind of story is really necessary, because we as the audience, to some extent, we need to see that it's more than his powers that make Superman super, right? So I think, there's plenty of examples of this in the comic books, right? Where it's Clark using his ingenuity and Clark using his demonstrating his ethics and his morality that supersede all the things he can do. The idea that he would do this to some extent, even if he didn't have powers, I think those kind of stories are always great, because they illustrate for us, why Superman is an aspirational figure, why we want to be like him.
That's a good, very good point. And I agree with that. Aside from the Klonoa stuff, which are more Jordan's flavor, not necessarily mine, I took at it from the other aspect of the episode. Before we venture into some of your least favorite episodes of the season, Zachy, there's one more that I want to bring up, and that was the introduction of, was it Silver Kryptonite?
Yes.
In this season?
Yeah. Splinter, yeah.
Yes, and the fact that it made
Written by Stephen S. DeKnight, by the way.
Well, okay, so all right. So there's there's one more in his favor. Yeah, I agree. But what did you... What were you guys' take on that? Because so far we've seen green, right, and red kryptonite. So what did you guys think of the show's version of this alternate kryptonite here?
I liked it. I think it's a clever way. I think as somebody who started reading the comics post-crisis, I always kind of looked down.
So you didn't have all these crazy colors when you started, right?
No, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I always kind of was like, oh, geez, how many kryptonites are there? This rainbow kryptonite. And so one thing that I appreciated about Smallville is that it took the rainbow kryptonite approach, and it's something that could have potentially become cheesy, but they found clever ways of doing it, and they never overdid it, which I appreciated. I mean, we got Skittles kryptonite, but it felt appropriate and it felt new, and in service of stories like Splinter, which I think is really a clever conceit, and you don't know really what's going on, and you feel Clark's paranoia.
Yeah,
I think it worked.
And again, I thought the way they framed it, through Clark's eyes, you could believe that you believed what he was seeing.
Yes,
and what he was experiencing,
It was really well done. The way it keeps you on your toes all the time, it reminds me of one of my favorite episodes, which is Labyrinth, from the next season. In just the way, just the suspense and the mystery of the episode is just those two episodes to me, I really like that about them, and for that reason, I sort of connect them, and I think they're sort of similar episodes. But yeah, I love Splinter.
Now, Jordan, before I ask Zachy about his least favorite episodes, because then I'll throw in mine and his. I have a feeling maybe we'll connect and be the same. But I have to ask this of you every season, because I never know if this is going to be the case or not. Are there any episodes that you disliked or didn't like as much?
No.
Okay, so your unbiased rose-colored glasses are still firmly on your head, and we're going to ask Zachy now. Zachy, are there any episodes?
Are we going to go back to favorite episodes after this?
Okay, are there ones that we didn't bring up that you want to mention?
Because if Zachy needs to go, then I do want him to make sure he gets to say everything he wants to say.
Because we may bring up your favorites in our negatives. That's what I'm saying. So you may get a chance to talk about
them. That is possible.
So let's let Zachy give us his negatives, and I'll chime in. And then if there happen to be some of your more positives, you can counteract that.
Okay.
So Zachy, are there ones that you just watch and you dislike or in downright cringe?
I got to be honest. I mean, on balance, I think this is a pretty consistent season. The only, as we mentioned, the only one where I was like, all right, was Thirst. Mm. Sorry, Jordan.
We just broke his heart. I love it.
But I mean, even like, just to be clear, I didn't dislike the episode. I was just like, because the benefit of a serialized show is you're like, all right, well, even if I don't like, the B and D story, I can still get on board with the A and C story. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, I can find stuff to like in just about every episode. So I can't think of, and even Vengeance, the one I mentioned, I said I wasn't crazy about the whole Akrata thing, but it's fine. I don't mind the episode. So that's me this whole season, because to me, I think of it less about specific episodes and more about the overall arc of the year. And there's so many great things that they accomplished in the season that I can't specifically point to this or that episode being a downer. In general terms, I mean, the episode Exposed is very exploitive.
Yeah.
But I can't even say that as a negative because, look, I have like a major crush on Erica
Durant. Yeah. Look, nobody can fault us on that. I think if we did a poll, on social media, most men, some women, and by and large, a lot of viewers of Smallville will admit they had a crush on Erica Durant. It's normal.
Sure.
It's not. There's nothing wrong with it. It is what it is. It's one of those, one of the guarantees of life. There's death, taxes, and if you watch Smallville, you probably had a crush on Erica Durant. It's just.
since we're bringing up that episode, I got to point out the amazing nod to Superman the movie in that episode with the helicopter scene.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did it again later when he sees his future, but that's a later season. I think that's 9 or 10, but they did a helicopter nod. But
Maggie Sawyer comes back in that episode?
Yeah. Well, since Zachy really didn't have any that sort of stood out to him, I will say two that really sort of kind of made me go, I'm not on board with this. It was the one where they did the Saw ripoff.
Mercy.
I was not a fan of that.
Written by Stephen S. DeKnight.
Yeah, sorry, Stephen S. DeKnight, if you're listening to this. I really do like you. Daredevil season 1 was fantastic. But this episode wasn't for me. Although it had some good look. Anytime you get why am I forgetting his name? Lionel. What the heck is the actor's name?
John Glover.
Thank you. John Glover and Annette O'Toole in scenes together, good stuff happens. So even though I did not like the general idea of it being, you know, diet saw, I did like their scenes together. And you sort of, I think that's where Clark realizes that Lionel, you know, that's where it really becomes apparent for that Lionel's in on the whole thing, and he sees it, you know, he sees Clark make a big rescue. So there are moments, it's just the whole saw angle of it. If I want to watch Saw, which I was never a big fan of, I'll watch it in the movies. And so I didn't need, you know, 42 minutes of you know, 30 out of the 42 being Saw inspired.
As someone who's never seen the Saw movies, I love this
episode. And that's fine, because, again, yeah. See, I told you we were gonna touch on things that I dislike that you would like. I see. I've come to know you in less than a year. I have you pegged, Jordan.
That was a safe bet.
Yeah. The other one that really was not for me was Hypnotic.
I will say that one is one that is difficult for me to watch at times, just because it's Lex essentially intentionally destroying the Klana relationship temporarily. But at the same time, I still love the episode. Like I said, I understand, because it reinforces Lex as a villain. Mm. Like, that's why I still like that storyline. But man, is that one moment that is, like I said, Reckoning. I adore Reckoning, but it's hard for me to watch. This is another one that I really love this episode, but it is, like, it's hard for me to watch as a Klana shipper. It really is.
Yeah, so, I mean, those were the only two. And then, of course, you know, I've beaten Thirst to death, so I'll let it lie. But aside from those three, I'm pretty good with most of the rest of the season. So, you know, I think this has, so far of the seasons we reviewed, Jordan, so far, I think this is the least where I've said I didn't like this episode. So there's something to that. So, Jordan, we'll let you quickly. Are there ones that you want to mention that we didn't, that haven't been touched on, that you want to get my thoughts or Zaki's thoughts on?
Well, as you know, I love them all, but there's one in particular that's one of my absolute favorites that hasn't, I don't think anybody's even mentioned it yet, which is Hidden. Okay, I love this episode. First of all, following off of Mortal, which was just an amazing Klana episode, then we get another one with this one, with Hidden, which is, okay, first off, we get the hilarious scene of Clark and Lana trying to sneak out of the house together and getting caught by Jonathan and Martha, and just their reaction. Oh my goodness, I am howling laughing at the scene so much. First of all, I love it because the beginning of it is just such a sweet Klana scene, but then when they're just trying to sneak out and they get caught, oh, it's so funny. And then when Chloe comes in and she's trying to figure out, and then the look on her face when she realizes what's going on, she's like, oh my goodness. Every time it just makes me laugh so hard. But I really like the idea of Gabriel as the villain in this episode. Like, it's somewhat similar to Van McNulty, but I do enjoy it. Like, Van McNulty, that was a great episode, Extinction. So I think that even though it's similar to that, like, it's a good thing it's similar, because that was so good, and this episode I think is so good. So I think that's really cool. And then obviously Clark gets his powers back in this episode, but the end of this episode, Clark and Lana reuniting. Oh my goodness, that scene makes me so happy with her running into his arms, and just that reunion there, and that embrace where you really see how much love they have for one another. My goodness, I adore that.
One of the things that you brought up when Lana and Clark get caught, I think it speaks to, you know, the Jonathan Kent father figure that Zaki mentioned earlier, because it's another, you know, it's something that Smallville tackled over the course of, you know, the first few seasons. How does a parent tell this, you know, superpowered individual, how does he broach the subject of sex, right? And so you had it in, you know, Heat, when he's trying to teach Clark to control the heat vision, and what that was born out of. And then here, when he gets when he has, you know, he assumes that Clark and Lana have been doing some inappropriate things in Clark's bedroom,
which is the second time, because he also caught Clark and Alicia in session.
But I don't know about you, Zachy, but every time I see sort of Jonathan Kent give Clark that admonishing stare after being caught of almost, or seemingly having had sex with one of his quote unquote girlfriends. It's like the awkwardness between, or the intentional awkwardness that he and Tom Welling are playing. It brings out a chuckle, but it is really good acting between the both of them.
Right.
And those moments, I think, like I said, it speaks to your, how does a parent react to these issues? And they're issues that all parents are going to eventually have to broach. So I think it's a good thing that Smallville, tackled these kind of things. And really, I think Smallville covered a lot of issues that teenagers would face along the course of its tenure run. And this was one of them that I think. So even though, like I said, there was a lot of clown in this episode that probably wasn't for me because it's not my thing. But I did like the idea of, like you said, the Gabriel being the villain. And then Clark stopping the nuclear.
Oh yeah, that's a cool scene.
Yeah, when he leaped up again, it's the closest we were gonna get to flying. And the visuals on that I think were some of the strongest. Even when you look at them with today's standards in mind, I think these are some of the strongest. You remember the scene we're talking about, right, Zachy? When he's stopping the. When he's on top of the missile in space, I thought visually I thought that was a very strong sequence. Even if you're comparing it to what we're seeing today on TV within the superhero genre,
I agree.
But Jordan, was there any other episode that we didn't touch on that you wanted to get Zachy's?
I would say Fanatic. I think that it's just a really creepy episode, because Samantha, I think is her name.
Yeah.
The girl who's obsessed with Lex, just really creepy. And that episode, written by Wendy Miracle, who was who was one of the showrunners of Arrow for a while, no longer, but So anyway, that's one. If anybody had anything to say about that one, I wanted to bring that up. I love that episode.
I thought it was interesting, and the way sort of Lex handled her, dealt with that was kind of interesting, because it's like, I don't want to sort of, I don't know how to broach that. It almost like he was sort of unsure of how to handle this, situation. It kind of, just in general, with the whole, the political angle of the season where they're both running for office. And they dealt with what's a line that you don't cross. Watching that, I mean, I'm not going to get political because I don't want to open that can of worms. But watching that with what's going on in today's political climate, there's some kind of poignancy to that theme. What are we, 12 years later? to that theme. So I think just the political. Aspect of it on the whole is how to run a campaign and how far do you go to get the win? It's a very poignant topic, even especially in today's climate. So like I said, I will vouch for that aspect of it. But then I think Zach, you touched on it briefly, the fact that we got did you mention it? The fact that. It was the same episode, Exposed. We got a Dukes of Hazzard reunion, complete with the sliding in the car the way they did back in the day. So that was cool. That was a cool.
Yeah, and when you think about it, it's kind of Bo Duke's fault that Luke, right? He's Bo.
Yeah.
It's kind of Luke Duke's fault that Jonathan dies.
Yeah. Yeah, in a way, you're right. I didn't think of it that way, but you're right. But yeah, so I mean, like I said, I mean, he's not a Superman legacy character, but the fact that that Smallville was able to orchestrate a sort of mini Dukes of Hazzard reunion was kind of cool and kind of
yeah, you know, I liked that.
A nod to classic TV of yesteryear. So, Jordan, anything else before? Because I want to get Zachy's a rating on the season. So, before we have to let him go. But anything else you wanted to mention?
Just let us. If you want to drop your rating, if you have to go, just let us know, Zachy, and you can drop your rating before we finish up. But Tomb is another favorite of mine this season.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I have not been able to find any official confirmation of this, but does the characters in this episode, to me, they feel so similar to Secret and Harm. Is that, I've never found any confirmation that was intentional, but I can't imagine that was a coincidence.
I mean, could be. I mean, I wouldn't put it past the producers to do that. But.
Right? I mean, it seems like it would make sense. I don't know. It feels so similar to that. And it reminds me a lot of the Young Justice episode about them, Secret, which is one of my favorite episodes of Young Justice.
I didn't prefer this. I didn't care for this episode, but for the most part, but I get what you're saying. This was the episode where Chloe, just so everybody knows, where Chloe is kind of thinks she's going insane, and they sort of touch on it's this episode that they touch on her mother and her mother being in a mental institution, right?
Speaking of legacy casting, will later be played by Linda Carter.
Yeah, right now, I think when Chloe found out that she was, that her mom was still alive and in the thing, it was a blonde actress, correct? That they showed from behind? And then.
It was a what actress?
Wasn't she blonde, the actress that they originally.
Oh, she had like dirty blonde
hair. Yeah. And then the time we actually see her, it's Linda Carter, which I mean.
But you can justify that easily, like she dyed her hair.
Well, no, yeah, but I'm just saying, anytime you can get Linda Carter on a DC TV show, I'm all for it. So the recast didn't bother me, but I'm just saying. But yeah, despite the fact that I didn't care for this episode, I see what you're saying with the Young Justice.
And the character is named Gretchen, the ghost, you know, the ghost character, and Greta Hayes is Secret's name in the comics.
Yeah.
So like, I just can't imagine that was coincidental. But I like the, it's very creepy. It reminds me of the Smallville episode Accelerate from season 2 quite a bit.
Yeah.
In terms of that, just the tone of it. It's a fun miss. It's scary, but it's not like super scary. But it's like a sort of a fun mystery. But then the villain is like really sick. Like he's like really creepy. He seems like a villain that would come out of like a show like Criminal Minds or something like that. Like because he's really creepy. But yeah, just a really, I just really enjoy this episode. Like it's a spooky episode, and it's just, I find it really enjoyable, and written by Stephen S. DeKnight, so another one of his. He wrote a ton this season.
I feel bad because the ones that you're mentioning that I haven't liked seem to all be written by him.
you did like Splinter, which he wrote.
Yeah, but it feels like every time you bring him up, it feels like I'm a hater, but I'm not. I'll reference Daredevil season 1.
And he wrote Mortal too, which you said you liked. So
yeah.
It's been a mixed bag for you when it comes to him this season, but
yeah, fair enough.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Zachy, did you have anything to say about Tomb?
No.
That's one of the ones Zachy blogged. He's like, hey, I don't remember that one.
No, I echo your thoughts. I think I don't know. I like overall the stuff DeKnight did on this show.
Yeah. So that it just seems like every episode it's like. Like I said, I didn't hate or dislike the episode. It was just kind of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't one that I was actively like when I was watching. Like the cringeworthy ones, it's like, oh god, and you know, if it's a cringeworthy one, what I'll do is I'll have it playing in the background and I'll kind of be paying attention, but I'll be doing something else. This one I was watching, it was just like, okay, yeah, it's.
I don't think any of those exist, Adam.
Well, in your mind, they don't. And God bless you that you can think this is literally a perfect TV show. But you know, but
it is.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy that you think that. But
well, thank you.
But yeah. So I mean, I think because you mentioned it was very similar in tone to the one from season 2 with you mentioned it.
Yeah, Accelerate.
Yeah, to me. it had a feeling of, well, I've seen this before, you know what I mean? So that's why maybe it didn't resonate with me as much. So yeah, that's why. Okay. It's not like I hate it, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's cool. Void is one I want to bring up, because first of all, another one where we get John Schneider back,
yes,
which is great. Another Jeannot Swart directed episode. But this one, this is an interesting one for me, because when I first saw this episode, I'd never watched the movie Flatliners before, and so I didn't realize that this was another movie plot for it as an episode. Which I don't mean that. I know some people think that's a bad thing. I love when they do their movie plot as an episode. Like, I love when they do that. So for me, that just added to this episode. I saw the remake of Flatliners, which I actually really enjoyed.
Oh, I saw the original, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, it doesn't matter which one you've seen. In any case, it is inspired by that. And that just makes me love it even more. But I think this episode is very cool. Pretty dark episode, actually. And like I said, the end of season 5 gets pretty dark. And, this is an example of that. But, but watching this on subsequent viewings after having seen Flatliners, it was so crazy for me. The first time I saw this after having seen Flatliners, I was like, oh my goodness, this is taken from that. I didn't even realize it the first time I saw it.
You know, that I will say that thing come to me on first, like, when I watched it live, because I had seen the original Flatliners, like, later on.
Have you seen the new one?
I have not seen the new one.
Okay. I recommend it. I really enjoyed it. And Iris West, Kiersey Clemons is in it.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
So, thought I'd mention that. Zachy, anything to say about Void?
No.
No, he's good. He's good.
I'm struggling to think of specific stuff from that episode that beyond the arc stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, I will say Tom Welling's directorial debut, which came right after that, Fragile. I really enjoy that episode. Anytime we see Clark in sort of like a older brother role, like with Ryan, or like a father role, like we saw in Ageless, in season 4, which I know most people don't share my love for that episode, but that's okay. Here in Fragile, where we see him, in a big brother role again. And I really enjoyed seeing that. Like, I think that it's nice to see that side of Clark. And I think that's a really good episode.
I will say Tom Welling is actually, in the moments where he's had to play that, he's very good at that. He's very strong at playing that sort of mentor-y kind of, like you said, big brother kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think anytime it's been done after Ryan, it just hasn't, like, to me, those are the, those two episodes with that character are the pinnacle of that dynamic.
I agree there. So, those are the best.
So anything else has not measured up. So this one, again, this one had a sort of a feeling of, I've sort of seen this before, and it's been done, in my opinion, much better. So it just, again, I didn't dislike this episode. It was one of those ones that was there for me. But again, the good news is I didn't outright skip over it. So there's a positive. But yeah, is there any?
Oh, I was waiting. I was seeing if Zachy had anything.
No, Zachy pretty much said he's out on this one.
Sorry, you guys cut out for a second. I'm sorry.
Oh no, my bad. You're good. Do you think you missed anything? I don't know if we need to repeat.
In terms of Fragile?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I mean, I remember at the time, you know, like, oh, Tom Welling is directing, and so I paid attention specifically when it first aired, just looking at the filmmaking style, and I was genuinely impressed by his skill behind the camera. And I remember at the time, like, you know, because shortly thereafter he became an executive producer on the show, and you can see how the longer the show went on, he had much more of a personal investment in really how everything panned out, you know. And so it's almost like we can see the beginnings of that with this episode, where he's like, hey, you know, I can have some say in how this thing is put together.
And I guess when you've been on a series for that, you know, it had been 4 years, you know, almost a full 5 at this point, that you'd get that urge, that desire to take the next step in the other avenues of production. So, you know, it's
and in addition to that, I mean, there's the realization that, you know, when it comes to that show, there was pretty much one person in the cast who was completely irreplaceable, and that was Tom Welling.
Yeah.
And so he had the ability to be like, hey, I want to direct. And it's like, what are they going to do, right?
Yeah, what are they going to do? Say no. Yeah.
You know, I mean, granted, you could, I suppose, recast Superman because they've done that before on a Superman TV show.
Yeah.
With Superboy. But I think Tom Welling had a much stronger hand. I mean, more than anybody else in that cast.
Yeah.
He was the one person who could legitimately be like, look, you don't have a show without me. Which, you know, as far as job security goes, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I think if he was going to make a demand, I think he's the only one that would be like, we kind of have to listen to this guy, so we can't.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if one of the extras comes in, oh, I want to direct this, so yeah, you're fired. Next guy up, who do we got? Who do we got? Yeah, what extras
who's
we got
behind you?
Yeah.
Don't let the door hit you on the way.
Who we got at the craft service table that we can rope in here for this scene here? You know, just... So, yeah, but it was, like I said, I think you're right. It has a special place for being his first directorial effort. And it's,
yeah.
I mean, juggling all that and having to act in the episode and everything else, it must be a hell of a task. So you got to give him props for at least taking the step to do that. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And then I think there's only one more before the, because you two mentioned the last two, but then there's Spade. Which I really enjoy, just sort of, well, first of all, it breaks my heart because this is the episode where Clark sees Lana and Lex together and finds out what's going on there. And it just, it breaks my Klana heart every single time I see that. It
breaks your heart and damages my retina, but yeah.
but yeah, so anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. Well, I think it's a cool episode. A lot of it takes place in Metropolis, which is kind of cool to see Clark in Metropolis, like, you know, I mean, this is a season where, you know, there's a lot more that does take place in Metropolis, but this episode in particular, we see Clark sort of, I mean, he's navigating, you know, nightlife in Metropolis a little bit too, which is kind of interesting. So anyway, I just think that's a good episode, and Graham's a cool villain, just an interesting villain who's like trying to help Clark in a way, in his own twisted way, sort of, which is, yeah, it's interesting. So, I enjoy that episode a lot.
Cool. All right, so.
And I'll mention, I gotta mention, it's not an episode, but I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it cracks me up. I don't know if you guys have seen the promo poster for this season, but it recently on the Smallville Reddit, it got a bunch of traction because people were like laughing about it. But I don't even understand why people think this is such a, I don't know, it's such an awful poster, because I kind of love it because it's accurate. It's this poster that says it's Clark and Lana and Lex on it, and it says good sex, bad Lex. And anyway, people were giving this poster a hard time recently, and I'm like, you can find both those things in season 5. That is accurate. And so anyway, I just thought I'd point out that
it's accurate, but I get why people think it's a little bit on the nose.
But yeah, so anyway, I thought I'd it cracked me up that people were giving it such a hard time on Reddit, but I like that.
Listen, that first season, since you talk about Ryan talking about posters, that first season poster, and I think it was the season 10 poster with the shadow of Superman behind him.
Mm.
Those were my top two, if we're going to talk about it. All of a sudden, I'm ranking posters, but there it is. those are my top two. But yeah, I haven't really paid attention to the season 5 poster. It hasn't been on my list of priorities, Jordan. Then again, I don't frequent Reddit forums or sub forums that often. So
I don't know either. I think it was actually Zach Moore from Always Holding the Spot.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
On Twitter.
Yeah.
And directed, like, put the link to the Reddit where everybody was freaking out about it.
All right. Well, I don't spend much time on Reddit. But so is that all you want to say, Jordan? Pretty much, or?
Yeah, I guess that should do it.
All right, cool. So I guess we're going to...
We all know I could go on for...
Yeah, you could go on for a 24-hour marathon, but we don't have that kind of time. And I don't think it let us record for that long. But given that, I think it's time we do our ratings. And Jordan, I'm going to let you go first because I have a good feeling that it's going to be somewhere on the high end of things.
Yes.
I have two specific ratings in mind. I'll see if I'm right, but I won't say it in case you know, I want to take away from your thunder. So what is your rating of season 5?
Well, yeah, it's not too hard to guess. It's an A+ for me, as every season of Smallville up to this point has been so far. So keep you in suspense, and we'll tell you if that trend's going to continue or not. But it's an A+ for me. I adore season 5, particularly the first half of season 5. I think is one of the strongest like periods of time in Smallville history. So much amazing stuff. Seeing the characters in college, Brainiac, Lex, all the stuff with Lex's season. Oh, I love season 5. A+ for me, definitely.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be wrong. I was going to say A or A+. I knew you were in that range. So I was
indeed.
Yeah,
indeed.
I'm glad I didn't spoil it for anybody. But Zaki, where do you stand on season 5 in terms of a rating?
I mean, I'd give it like a solid B+. There's a lot of stuff that works well. I don't think it's necessarily the show at its absolute best, but it's got enough in it that there is a lot to recommend.
Yeah, I'm gonna. You know what? I'll go one. I guess one. I'll go with an A-, slightly higher than Zaki, because coming off of a season where I was the weakest, in my opinion, season 4, to the point where in my rewatch, I skipped episodes. Like, I started an episode, and then I realized that I really didn't care because it was so bad, in my opinion, that I completely skipped over it. Coming from that season where this season I didn't skip over any of the episodes, and there were only two that I really rolled my eyes at and sort of metaphorically banged my head against the desk. I gotta give it props for that. But also, the really, really good stuff was really, really good. So in that respect, I stand firm with an A- for season 5. Zaki, we know we have to let you go, but this was fun. We provided that Zaki, after 3 times, still wants to come back. I am planning a side podcast episode with Jordan. You may not be here for this one because you're not a Star Trek guy, and that's shame on you. You need to bone up on your taste in television and sci-fi. But aside from that, we've talked off air about doing a review of the 2 volumes of the Star Trek Green Lantern crossover.
I'll come for that. Green Lantern, I'll come.
We'll figure that out. But we wanted to get you and Chris Clow both on here because you're both Star Trek experts, as I like to say. I'm not as expert as you two, but I am a fan of the franchise. So hopefully. My plan is to coordinate that sometime it'll be well before Star Trek Discovery Season 2 starts. We'll coordinate it before, you know how they're doing those 4 shorter episodes, like those mini episodes, those shorts, lack of a better word. I was trying to find something more fancy than saying Star Trek shorts, but that's what they are. They're doing 4, yeah. You know, like a few weeks. So before those air, maybe we'll try and get that recording scheduled and worked out. So I'll be in touch with you and Chris about that.
But any chance to hang out with you guys and with Chris?
In the meantime, while people are waiting to hear that, where can they find you for more of your discussions about all things geeky and sci-fi and all that?
Well, if you're looking for podcasts, I would point you towards the Movie Film Podcast, co-hosted by myself and my partner Brian Hall. We actually just dropped a commentary track for The Dark Knight.
Oh, perfect!
For your listeners, that might be of interest. We also last month did a commentary track for Superman 3. So 2 very different DC movies got some commentaries.
Well, big Smallville connections there.
There you go.
Yes, Annette O'Toole. Yeah.
Annette O'Toole, exactly. Yeah.
And
so,
Christopher Reeve.
And in Smallville.
Yeah.
And Margot Kidder.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all. It's all connected.
And Mark Fleur.
Something that the Marvel TV shows cannot say. It's all connected. Because these are actually literally connected.
Yes, they can, Adam.
I disagree, but that's another podcast.
But you can also, I also have a show called Nostalgia Theater where I sit down and talk to actors and filmmakers about the things that we all loved growing up, I hope. And my latest episode of that features my interview with Steven Weber, who starred on the TV show Wings in the 90s. And we had a great chat for about an hour. So I would love if you could check that out. And I'm on Twitter at Zachy's Corner, Z-A-K-I-S Corner.
Perfect. So definitely check out those. I know I'm going to, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a rewatch of The Dark Knight with your commentary.
Let me know how that goes. I hope you like it.
I will. I'm sure I'll enjoy it. I'm pretty sure at the very least you enjoyed The Dark Knight. So we'll have that common ground. And then from there, we'll see. But I'm pretty sure we'll be on the same page
I am a fan of that movie.
Most human beings on the planet Earth are a fan of that movie.
That's true.
I haven't encountered anybody that says I hate that movie, and if I do, I'm giving up on humanity. But thank you again, Zachy, for gracing us with your presence. This was fun talking about Smallville and Superman again with you, and can't wait for that Star Trek Green Lantern chat.
Yep, looking forward to it.
We'll definitely be in touch, and listeners, head over there and check out all his platforms and all his podcasts and his written reviews. Check it all out and get the full Zachy experience. But we'll let you go, Zachy. Have a great rest of the weekend and a good week ahead.
Thank you so much, you guys. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Take care, Zachy. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. Well, for the listeners, I guess we'll just move right into our news and make this pretty seamless. So
yeah.
Sound good to you, Adam?
Sounds like a plan to me.
All righty. Well, first thing I want to talk about is we got the results from the Eisner Awards, and guess who won Best Writer?
Well, I'm going to take a stab at your excitement and say Tom King.
Yes, indeed he did. Yeah, for specifically Batman Annual number 2, which, yes, my favorite comic book of all time. Oh my goodness, he totally deserved that for that. For Batman Elmer Fudd Special number 1, which was also phenomenal, and for Mr. Miracle. Now he's sort of sharing the award because it's two people won the award. It's also Marjorie Liu won the award for Monstrous, so it's sort of a shared award. But yes, Tom King, Best Writer. This well, you know he's my favorite writer, so it excites me so much that he was honored with this award.
Well, and for that particular story, I will concur that I like that story. So,
which one?
You said the annual number 2.
Well, he won it for three things. He won it for annual number 2, for Batman Elmer Fudd Special number 1, and for Mr. Miracle.
Oh, well, I liked all three of those works, so I'm on board with that. Yeah.
Cool. Yes. So, congratulations, Tom King.
Yeah.
That is amazing. And then also, best penciler / inker was Mitch Gerads, who won it. He won it specifically for Mr. Miracle, but of course he's also worked on Batman too. He did. I don't know if since early 2017, I don't know if those count for this, but he did those, and then he also did a page in Batman number 50. So yeah, but very. He's an amazing artist, so definitely very deserving there, I would say.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Tom. Congratulations, Mitch. Very exciting. Congratulations. Moving on. We've got news that Batman is getting a new costume in the comics. And okay, first of all, here's the surprising thing, is that we'd already known, because in Doomsday Clock, which takes place in the future of the DC Universe, he's got a new suit. So I guess this one is going to be first and then... He'll wear the Doomsday Clock suit, the one we see in Doomsday Clock, which is sort of similar to his Batman Incorporated suit, or his Batman Earth One suit. After that, is my guess.
Yeah, my the way I see it playing out is there's 6 more months of Doomsday Clock to go, and it's I believe if I remember correctly, Doomsday Clock is bimonthly.
Well, now it is because they shifted it.
Yeah, so we're looking at another year before. We see that.
But the question is, you know, because their original intent was for Doomsday Clock to only take a year, and then because it was supposed to be a set a year in the future, and then it was supposed to sync up. Now it might not sync up.
So what I think you're going to see is this costume will probably be this sort of pre Doomsday Clock costume.
Right, in the interim. Exactly. That's what my speculation was.
Will probably last until the very end of Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, that's my guess as well. That's my guess as well.
Yeah. So, they're going back to pre-rebirth, I guess it would be, or pre-New 52?
Well, pre-New 52, because in New 52 he didn't have the trunks, and now he's got the trunks back. So
yeah, but
I was going to say, we've got two images of it. One is by Lee Weeks, and then the other one's by Tony S. Daniel. And he's got the bat suit without, so it doesn't have the yellow outline around the bat suit anymore. And now he's got the trunks back.
Yeah.
Those are essentially the main changes to it. And there's no purple anymore in the cape. So, so he shifted around. I love it. I love the rebirth suit, but I love this one too. But my favorite thing about this change is Tom King revealed what the reasoning behind this change is. And it breaks my heart, but I also love it so much. Which is that it's the reason Bruce is changing his suit is because his old suit reminds him of his time with Selena, which obviously makes sense because they've been together for so much of Rebirth when he's been wearing that suit. And it breaks my back cat heart to know that that's the reason. But I also think it's such the perfect reasoning. Like, man, I just, it breaks my heart. It does, but it's so perfect too.
I mean, I never, like I said, The trunks being there or not never really fazed me because, again, I don't spend a lot of time looking at Batman and or Superman's package. So my eyes don't go to the trunks. But that they're there, it's fine. When I re-enter, you know, as a kid, when I encountered comics, they were there. When I re-entered the world of comics, around the Superman, Batman, Jeff Loeb run, and the Hush, the trunks were there. So to me, it's not some, oh my God, revelation. It's going back to what I've known, and I'm fine with it. But I'm intrigued.
I'm with you. The way I feel about the trunks is overall, if you asked me to pick like definitively if I prefer no trunks or trunks, I would say no trunks. But honestly, I love costumes where he has the trunks. I love them when he doesn't have the trunks. So I love it both ways because there's some costumes I love where he has it, some where he doesn't.
For me, here's my distinction. In live-action cinema, I don't want to see him in trunks. I don't think it's I don't know if that in a 2018 setting in a live-action series or movie, I don't know that that would work.
Well, according to Jeff Johns, everything that works in a comic book can work in live action, and I kind of agree with him, so I think they can make it work.
Well, I mean, hold on a second. So, look, Adam West wore the trunks, right? And it worked for 66.
Yeah.
But a Batman that takes himself 100% seriously? And to be fair, we've never seen him with trunks in live action, so I don't know that it won't work.
Well, other than Adam West in the serials.
No, but I'm saying, in a modern context. Like, if, let's say, on the CW Batwoman show, right? We get a glimpse of Batman, and he's wearing the shorts on the outside. Then I'll be able to say, well, okay, in a modern day context, that either A works or B doesn't work.
But you can't, I see what you're saying, but since we don't know.
All I can say is it worked in 66 because we didn't know anything else. That was it. I mean, we hadn't seen 89 yet. You know, Batman had always worn the trunks. There was never a time where he didn't have them. And B, that show wasn't taking itself 100% seriously, right? So it's a different dynamic. So we'll see if they ever decide to do that in live action. Then I can be the judge. But, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But
we haven't seen it, so it's hard to judge.
Comic books, it works. And look, Superman the movie and Lois and Clark have had Superman in trunks in relatively modern day stories, and Brandon Routh as well, and that worked. It never bothered me. But with Superman, it's hard. It's a different ball of wax with Superman because I don't know. It seems more it seems more, I don't know if natural is the right word, but you know what I'm saying.
I do get what you're saying.
I'm more used to Superman with trunks in live action than not having him in trunks in live. Like, if you, and I know this is going to be weird to say, if you analyze the amount of time Superman's worn trunks in live action and compare that with Batman,
it's a lot more.
Yeah. So I'm more used to that. That's all. So
that's
fair. We'd have to see, but as of right now, I think it works in comics for Batman.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work.
We got off on a tangent live action. But yeah,
so it works in the comics. I'm fine with it. Yeah.
Yeah, these images look amazing.
But at the end of the day, what I'm really looking forward to is the oval. What I'm looking forward to is the post Doomsday costume.
Oh yes, that looks awesome too.
That's what I'm really waiting for.
I got you. Yeah, that looks awesome too. Mm. So, anyway, this Tony Daniel cover is for Batman number 55, which is out on September 19th. Yeah. So,
it's around the corner.
I don't know exactly. I guess this suit's probably debuting in that issue.
I would assume so.
I guess we'll see. Alrighty, moving on. This is something I alluded to earlier, but we'll bring up now, which is some news on Joker, which is Frances Conroy is in talks to play the Joker's mother in the film. And first of all, I'll point out, I'll just say I'm very excited about this because this is Frances Conroy returning to the DC Universe. She was in Catwoman, which we all know how much I love that film. And she's played Martha Kent twice in voice roles in animation.
Oh,
she's
cool.
Been in two of the DCU AOM films as Martha Kent.
Sweet.
So I'm very excited to see her return to the DC Universe. And, I mean, they're putting together quite cast for this movie. If the De Niro thing pans out, and I mean, obviously we already know Joaquin Phoenix, but like, yeah, this is, and I mean, Zazie Beetz obviously doesn't have the same pedigree, but I liked her Geostorm that I saw her in, so I'm liking the cast they're putting together here, and Frances Conroy returning to the DC Universe should be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the cast is just incredible, and I just get this feeling that we're in for something really special with this film.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So I'm, so far, all the casting decisions or the people that are in talks, I'm on board with. So, yeah, I can't wait. Like, to me, I can't wait for this film. I don't want to come too fast because I want to enjoy Aquaman, Shazam, and Wonder Woman first. But
we've got a ton before that we have to enjoy.
I'm excited for it for sure.
Yes, absolutely. I can't wait. I'm totally with you. I can't wait for this film. So, moving on, though, we've got a report from Mario that has revealed some stuff about Matt Reeves' Batman film.
Ah, yes. Francisco Robles of Revenge of the Fans.
Yes, who's been on this show before.
Yeah, and who will be back at some point.
Yes, indeed. I am trying to load the article right now, but my computer is decided to be slow. So, there we go. Now I've got it pulled up.
All right.
Okay, so we got three bullet points here.
Sure.
One, and this is actually coming from Bill's article, sort of, that was talking about Mario's article.
Sure.
One, the Batman Bruce Wayne in Reeves' film will be significantly younger than Batfleck, like 10 to 15 years younger.
Okay.
So we're talking mid-20s.
Sure.
Two, it could be taking inspiration from Frank Miller's Batman Year One. Three, Jack Houston allegedly was one of the actors that met with Reeves in addition to Jake Gyllenhaal. Houston is 35, so that may put him out of the running since they are going the mid-20s route when it comes to Bruce Wayne's age. Okay, here's what I'll go ahead and say. First of all, this continues to lend credence to the fact that this is likely going to be a prequel, which is cool with me because there's so much rich history that they can play with. I mean, obviously, this is a Batman who's been operating 20 years in Gotham when we beat him, so I'm excited to see something younger. Not to see something younger, but I mean, yes, to see something younger, but to see something in that in an earlier time. I mean, there's so much time there that you can explore. In terms of him being in his mid-20s, that excites me because, one, that is around the age that I'll likely be when this movie actually comes out, and two, because that's the age of Batman in my favorite animated series, The Batman. So obviously, that's, I've talked about this many times before, that's what made me a diehard Batman fan. So to get a movie where, a live action movie, I should say, where Batman's that age, mm-hmm. would be very cool.
Sure.
For me, for that reason. In terms of it taking inspiration from Batman Year One, Christopher Nolan did that too with Batman Begins, and look how that turned out. So that's very exciting to me. We already know that Matt Reeves is going to be taking some of the noir elements, or sorry, he's going to be using some noir elements in his film. And so that, I mean, that Year One has a lot of that, so that makes sense. And I'd love it if he if Reeves tackled some of the organized crime stuff, like with Falcone in Year One. So that excites me as well, just because I love the organized crime aspect of Year One. I don't think that he'll probably be taking the origin. Like, I don't want him to, and I don't think he'll probably be making – I mean, I don't expect him to make an origin film, and I hope he doesn't make an origin film, just because I think we've already gotten the perfect Batman live-action origin film in Begins, like I alluded to, which also took inspiration from Year One. So I don't think that's the part of Year One that he's going to take inspiration from. I think it's more so the tone and the, some of the characters, like Falcone maybe. And then in terms of Jack Houston – I don't think I've seen him in anything, but I did love what his uncle did in Wonder Woman, so there's that, but it sounds like he's probably not in the running, so I guess it probably doesn't matter what I think of him as an actor. So anyway, that's my thoughts on those three things. Overall, I'm very excited about these report, this report.
Okay, here's what I'll say. On the younger Batman thing, I'm fine with that. I think that whether that means prequel to BVS and the shared continuity, or whether that means Matt Reeves is doing his own thing, at this point, my chief concern is a really strong Batman film, a really good Batman film. Whether that's in continuity or not, that's all secondary to me. But first and foremost, it's a good Batman film. I think it's only fair that if Matt Reeves wants to do multiple films, more than one, I think we need, you're going to need a younger actor, because, you know, Affleck is pushing 45, what is he, 45, 46?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
a trilogy is gonna take 8 to 10 years. You know, it's not to say that he doesn't look younger, but it's an ask for an actor of that age to commit even more. Like, he's committed three times to doing Batman. To ask him, you know, again. So not to rehash the Affleck stuff, but a younger actor. For if Matt Reeves intends to do more than one, which that's what we're hearing, makes a lot of sense. So I'm on board with that. In terms of taking cues from Year One, I love Year One as a story.
Yeah, me too.
So somebody tells me they want to take cues from Year One, then I'm going to say okay to that. The other thing is, you know, I heard some pushback online. Oh my God, again with the Year One. And some of the reasons are like, well, you know, Begins took from Year One. Year One had an animated, movie based on it. It's already two times Warner Brothers has went to the wall. To the Year One one, I said, well, and to counter that, my argument is, well, okay, that's fine. You can say that it went to the wall two times, but let's look at The Dark Knight Returns, right?
Yep, back to back movies they took from.
Well, they're well,
Dark Knight Rises and Batman v Superman. Well, they just took different elements from.
Well, not only that though, Jordan, but there was some of Batman 89 that borrowed from Dark Knight Returns. Tim Burton even says so, as so. So you have that. You have, like you said, Rises.
Yeah.
You have BVS.
Yeah.
And you have the two-part animated adaptation.
Yeah.
So that's four.
Let's not forget that both the new Batman Adventures and my favorite animated series, The Batman, did Dark Knight Returns adaptations as well.
So we're looking at six times that Warner Brothers has gone to the Dark Knight Returns well. So don't tell me that they can't use Year One again.
Yeah, and like I was saying, they might. This is what I'm saying. Reeves can take different elements. There's many elements in Year One.
Yeah, of course he can.
He's not necessarily taking the same elements that Christopher Nolan took in Batman Begins. That's what I'm trying to say here. Because, like, look at it. The Dark Knight Rises and Batman v Superman. Back-to-back live-action Batman movies. Those were in terms of live-action Batman movies, those came one after another. Obviously in different continuities, but one after another. And they both took heavily from The Dark Knight Returns, but they both took different elements from it.
Yes.
So, and you got two very unique, distinct movies, both of which I love.
And again, I think Matt Reeves is, again, to quote Zaki Hassan, who's just our guest, he said in a tweet that Matt Reeves is a smart enough filmmaker to not simply redo the origin and make a copy of Batman Begins.
Yeah, of course.
In fact, there is, add to Mario's report, an individual by the name of Casey Walsh, as in Casey is the two letters Casey, not Casey. I don't know if his name is Casey, but I'm just going by his Twitter account. Who runs the, let me see which website this is. It's a site called Geeks Worldwide.
Yeah, I know that site.
Yeah. So he tweeted out sort of backing up Mario and helping to clarify Mario's report that, and I'll pull up his exact tweet here. He says, seems to be a lot of confusion on the Batman, so to clear it up, it's not an origin story, and it's not adapting Year One verbatim. It takes place very early on in his career, and they will put elements from Year One, but we aren't getting another Batman Begins. He will be Batman from the get-go.
That's exactly what I was suggesting when I was talking about it. That's what I was saying. That just because he's adapting Year One doesn't mean it's an origin story. Yeah.
And Mario also clarified in another report that, on Twitter, that he's also heard from his sources. Two other books that are mentioned are Zero Year and Dark Victory. So, again, much like Batman Begins, much like every Batman movie to this point, it's going to take elements of a wide variety of different storylines
and create a unique blend of them. Yeah.
So
and guess what Dark Victory has some of?
Robin?
Well, yes, Robin. But Bat-Cat, which Year One has some too, but Dark Victory has more.
Yeah.
So that has me excited. But yes, it has Robin. So, I mean, we could certainly speculate about that.
So again, to jump to the conclusion that, oh no, it's going to be Batman Begins redo, that's, to me, is wrong.
I totally agree.
Highly inaccurate.
Totally agree.
In terms of
Jack Houston, was the third point.
Right. I like the fact Jack Houston is a very serious actor.
You've seen him in stuff?
I've seen him in stuff, but all that points to, you know, whether you look at Jake Gyllenhaal or Jack Houston and whoever the third guy that Reeves originally met with was, he's looking at legitimately strong, first and foremost, actors with serious talent. That's a comforting fact. Now, obviously, Jack Houston is seemingly out of the running because of his age now, but I find it a positive that he's looking for actors of such caliber.
Sure.
the speculate Mary also speculated that what if Matt Reeves doubles back to Jack Houston for the role of Harvey Dent, who, according to what Mary has heard, is in the film. That could be a possibility. He also says that Penguin is a adversary in the film, not the main adversary, but a adversary.
Which sort of makes sense with what we heard before, that he's not going to be the main villain of Birds of Prey, because it's going to be the villain of that is going to be a Batman villain who's never appeared in a live action film before. So that sort of syncs up with that.
So when you start hearing about, you know, Year One, Zero Year, Dark Victory, Harvey Dent, the Penguin, clearly this is not Year One or Batman Begins 2.0. So that should be, you know, that fear should be dissuaded.
So in Bill's article, he's got the panel of Batman crashing Falcone's party, which is just like, God, I love that scene.
That would be a great scene.
All I can think about now is, if we see that scene in live action, though, with Batman saying, "Ladies, gentlemen, you have eaten well," oh my goodness, I might pass out.
And the other thing, too, Jordan, like, as great as Begins was, and everybody knows that I think it's, you know, I think it's a masterpiece.
I am totally with you,
100%. We can't forget that, yes, the suit was changed, but it was still in keeping with the general aesthetic of what had come before. What's that?
What do you mean?
Like, you know, the black molded rubber and all that.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
What if Matt Reeves goes very grassroots for his first film, and, you know, it's a more stripped down Batman to the, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then over the course of his potential trilogy, you know, we see that evolution, but.
Perhaps something like Earth One Batman, like how he's very rudimentary in terms of his.
Yeah. I could see that being something, because even in year one, the suit and the gadgets weren't God knows what, right? They were very.
Yeah.
So that's what he could be taking from year one as well.
That could be.
So, and if you think of Zero Year, that certainly is the case. So,
yeah.
So,
yeah. I brought up Earth One just because that's where it really stands out to me.
And you know, the funny thing is, when you mention Penguin, a younger Batman, not a straight up origin, that also sounds like Earth One.
Yeah.
So I wonder if one of Matt Reeves' inspirations is also Earth One. It just wasn't mentioned in the article.
And I adore Earth One.
And think about it. Who's the villain in Zero Year?
Riddler.
There's an additional villain aside from Penguin. Could it possibly be Riddler? Maybe.
Could be.
So just things to keep in mind. I'm on board with all of this. And like I said, I have complete faith in Matt Reeves.
And you know what that makes me think of? If it's Riddler and Penguin? Can you think of an animated thing that features the two of them?
The Batman?
The Batman, the episode Night in the City, where there's a turf war between, well, Joker's in that too, but Penguin and Riddler.
Yeah. So, but I have complete faith in Matt Reeves.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
And I'm liking everything I'm hearing from these reports, so.
So I think we both give this report a bat thumbs up.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, next thing is, and this is another piece of news that I alluded to, actually, when we were talking about Smallville, which is, we're getting another Smallville legacy cast in Supergirl, which is that Smallville's Davis Bloom, Sam Witwer, is going to be playing Agent Liberty in season 4 of Supergirl. We'll talk about him later in this episode again, because he's in the trailer for season 4, which we'll be talking about. But this is very exciting because first of all, it's very fitting to me, because last season, obviously, the Rain storyline was lifted so heavily from Davis Bloom on Smallville, which was amazing, and there were even some references to Davis Bloom with Ruby going to Davis Middle School. So it's so fitting to me now that Sam Witwer is joining the show as a series regular, as Agent Liberty. And here's how they're describing him. This is coming from an Entertainment Weekly article by Chancellor Agard. In the show's interpretation of the character, Agent Liberty is the ruthless and terrifying founder and figurehead of Children of Liberty, a hate group that supports a human-first world order. According to a description from the show's producers, he's, quote, a brilliant orator in the guise of a family man, and the scariest thing about him is how easily he can convince people that he's right. Given that Supergirl and the DEO tend to be pro-alien integration, it's definitely fair to assume they won't get along with Agent Liberty and his Children of Liberty. Yeah, so this sounds really interesting to me. It fits in with what we saw in the trailer, was it really does look like in season four there's going to be a sort of people who are pro-aliens and people who are against aliens sort of butting heads. And it looks like Agent Liberty is going to be sort of at the head of the anti-alien movement, which is going to be really interesting to see. And, I mean, we saw, I guess, since it ties in, I'll go ahead and mention it. But like I said, we did see him in the trailer. He looks very creepy. His mask reminds me actually quite a bit of the voice of Rao from Krypton. I don't know if you saw that as a parallel, but that's how I...
Well, I saw him looking more like the actual Guardian from the comics than...
I can see that in terms of the suit, yes. Yeah. In terms of his mask, though, particularly, it reminded me of the voice of Rao. But anyway, that was just me. But yeah, I'm very excited. I'm just so happy. I mean, and a year after, I mean, we got Erica Durance on the show last year. We got Laura Vandervoort in season one. We got, Dean Cain and Helen Slater are Smallville alums too. So just another Smallville alum joining us. So,
I'm totally on board with him being part of this cast. He was a great villain in Smallville. He was a great Doomsday.
Absolutely.
You're gonna get no pushback from me on this casting.
cool. Well, we also got the Flash's big bad cast for season five. I didn't mean to make that sound like that. Agent Liberty is gonna be Supergirl's big bad. I don't know if that's the case. It might be the case, but I don't know. But we got the Flash's, this we do know is going to be the big bad of the Flash, and that's Cicada. Again, we see him at the end of the Flash trailer too, so we'll talk about him more later. But he's going to be played by Chris Klein, who's an actor that I'm not familiar with. But in terms of the character, the way Entertainment Tonight described him is as a cult leader obsessed with the Flash. And the thing I think is notable to point out here, and it's even pointed out in this comic resources article that I'm looking at right now, is that, of course, he'll follow in the footsteps of the Thinker as being another non-speedster villain, which is, I think is cool, because, you know, they're getting some variety in there with the villains. So, yeah, I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good, and I don't know much of the actor. I know he was in, wasn't he in the American Pie series or something?
Yes, yeah, I've never seen that, but yes, he was.
That doesn't lead me to think of a villain, because of what that film series was.
What is it? I don't know.
It's a comedy spoof. It's
Hey, well, like you and I.
A lot of sexual innuendo and et cetera, et cetera. So.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, well, but you and I have talked about this before. How sometimes comedic actors can play the best villains, like Michael Rosenbaum as Lex.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't know, but I mean, it doesn't automatically, you know, scream villain, but that's okay. I'm open, and again, I trust the cast department of these shows, so.
Oh, yeah, they've done such a phenomenal job, so I agree with you, and I'll throw this out there, too. I was watching the DC All Access interview with the Flash cast, and Flash cast, that actually has a nice ring to it, but they were talking about how last season, they sort of made things lighter, and then things got darker towards the end of the season, and they were talking about how this season, they're going to sort of have it so that the darkness really comes from the villain. So they said the villain's going to be really dark, I guess, is what I took from that.
I'm good.
And that the light is really going to come from our heroes this year. So it's sort of going to be a split in terms of the tones like that. So that's what they were saying about it. So that has me intrigued that he could be a pretty dark villain at that.
Yeah.
If I'm interpreting that right.
Yeah.
Cool. what's that?
Yeah, no, I'm on board with that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. So another thing that's very exciting is that Batman, the Complete Animated Series Deluxe Edition, which is going to include finally Blu-rays of Batman Animated Series. So Batman Animated Series in HD is going to be being released on October 16th, 2018. So shortly after my birthday, actually, which is pretty cool. It's going to feature, I mean, obviously everything on Blu-ray, all like the entire series that includes the new Batman Adventures. It's going to include Funko Pops of Batman, Harley, and Joker. And it's going to include Batman Mask of the Phantasm and Batman Sub-Zero on Blu-ray as well, which those have already been previously released on Blu-ray, but they're going to be part of the set. And also these art cards. I see one of them right here. It's Poison Ivy and Batman. But yeah, these cool art cards from the series too. So it's going to have all of that together in one package, which is very, very cool. It's going to retail for $112.99, like I said, releasing on October 16th. We know that they're going to be available. The first two seasons are going to be available in HD on the streaming service. So we still don't know exactly when the streaming service is being released. So anyway, in terms of the timing of that, it'll be interesting to see how the timing of that shakes out. But yeah, very exciting news. I mean, I know this has been something that people have been waiting for a long time, myself included. I probably won't be getting the set. I'll be getting them probably on Amazon because I go digital with everything. So I'll probably be getting them because obviously anytime they release a new Blu-ray of something, they put it on, you know, the streaming services. Sure. I'm not talking about the DC Universe one. I'm talking about, you know, paid streaming services like where you buy them a la carte, you know, in HD like they did with Max of the Phantasm, like they did with Sub-Zero. So I'll probably be getting them digitally, of course, when they come out in HD. But I'm very excited to see the HD remasters of all the episodes. That's very exciting. Just really hope the Batman's coming next. But the only thing I would say, this package they put together is amazing. It does surprise me a little bit that given that the new Batman Adventures is included as part of it, the fact that they didn't include Mystery of the Batwoman on Blu-ray, but they included Mask of the Phantasm and Sub-Zero, it's a little bit surprising to me and kind of weird. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to complain about it. It's just kind of weird to me. But anyway, so much stuff in this box set. It looks beautiful. I mean, the casing on this, oh my goodness, such a beautiful box set. So anyway, exciting news here.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way. I have everything listed in the set.
Not the Funko Pops or the cards.
Right. But even though what I'm saying is, even though I have everything, I'm telling you, I'm tempted. I'm almost close to pulling the trigger. So I'm excited for this. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, cool. Well, yeah. Like I said, I'll be pulling the trigger digitally. But yeah. So I'm still. Yeah. Even though I won't be actually getting the physical Blu-rays, I don't have a Blu-ray player, so that would be why. But
makes sense.
Like I said, I've gone completely digital now. But yeah, so very exciting. I'm so excited to see it in stunning HD. I mean, Mask of the Phantasm, just, oh my goodness, in HD looks so amazing. So
yeah.
Be exciting to see the rest of the series in that. Yeah. So we've got some news, some more news on Supergirl casting, I should say, because like I said, we talked about Sam Witwer before. But Mercy Graves and Otis, who in this continuity is going to be Mercy's brother, actually, have been cast for Supergirl. They're both going to be recurring characters. This is so funny because I think Rebecca and I can't remember whether it was on our show when I was talking to Rebecca or whether it was on when I was on Supergirl Radio, but we were talking about Miss Tessmacher, and we were like, oh, okay, now all they need, because now she's working with Lena Luthor, we were like, okay, now all they need is an Otis, and now they're getting one. So this is so exciting. I know I've talked about it before when we talked about Superman and Superman 2, how Otis is like one of my favorite parts of the Christopher Reeve movies. I love Otis so much, and to see him back in live action is very exciting for me. He's going to be played by Robert Baker, and then Mercy is going to be played by Rona Mitra. I'm not familiar with either of these actors. But it should be very interesting to see Mercy in live action again. She was in BVS, of course, in live action, and Tess Mercer on Smallville was an amalgamation of her and Eve, and Eve Tessmacher, that is, and Lena Luthor. But we've seen her in live action a couple times before, but see her back in live action. The way she's described for Supergirl is as an ex-Cadmus agent, So they'll bring back Cadmus heavily, it looks like, in season four, who always believed in human exceptionalism. But with both Lex and Lillian in prison, Mercy is stepping out of the Luther shadow and running her own show. With her biting wit and lethal brawn, Mercy steadily becomes a key figure in National City's growing Human First movement. So again, looks, these characters are tying in with Agent Liberty, it looks like, in terms of their anti-alien sentiments. Baker's Otis Graves is Mercy's de facto right-hand man. What he lacks in brains, he makes up with his savant-like ability to assassinate aliens. So this is, first of all, my one hope is that basically what I want him to do is I want him to call Lena Miss Luthor. I wanted to say that. And I want her to just get completely fed up with his, you know, stupidity. Like, I just really want to get that dynamic. So that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Very exciting here.
I'm excited about Mercy coming on the show. Can't say I'm below this, but, you know, I'll give it a chance.
Come on, you admitted he's fun. You admitted.
Yeah, but I don't know if I want to see that in a modern setting.
But he was in the Smallville season 11 comics like that.
Yeah, but it's different reading it than seeing, you know, it's a different experience with something in the line. So,
well, I can't wait. Also.
Like I said, I'll give it a shot.
Miss Luthor. I can't wait for that.
I'll give it a shot.
Because we've gotten Miss Tessmacher several times. So I can totally see it.
Oh, you're probably going to get your wish.
Oh, my goodness. I can't wait. I'm going to freak out. Alrighty. Well, this is a nice segue to move into a trailer where we get a glimpse of what we're going to be seeing in the next seasons of these TV shows. We got these at Comic-Con. And I'm going to skip over the Black Lightning one because while that was a really cool trailer, there's nothing new in it.
Yeah, it was basically a 5-minute recap of season one.
Yeah, it's there's nothing new in that one. And it's really cool because season one was awesome.
Most of the Legends trailer was a recap except for the Constantine parts.
Yeah, well, there was new footage in it. There was new footage with the character. Yeah, we'll talk about that one because there is new footage. But the first one we're going to talk about is Arrow. So, I love this trailer. Seeing Ali finally with something kind of, I mean, yes, we saw it in the Legends episode, Star City 2049, but now we see Ali with a goatee in present day. It's not a complete, like, as much as he has in the comics, you know, but it's still, he's there. We're finally getting it, and it's very exciting. Seeing him in prison. Seeing some returning villains, it really does continue to reinforce that they're taking inspiration from the Escape from Supermax script, because, you know, where Green Arrow was going to face the people he put away in prison, because we see Cody Rhodes here, we see Bronze Tiger, we see Brick, and so seeing Ali take those on, very exciting. There's a new masked vigilante running around. My guess is that it's Roy, but they haven't revealed it yet. We hear Laurel sort of speaking about vigilantes. So some very exciting stuff in this trailer, I guess. What are your thoughts on this one, dude?
I really liked it. I really liked that Escape from Supermax idea and script. So the fact that they're employing that for the TV show, or elements of that for the TV show, I'm excited for. I agree with you. I think the mystery hero that could be the. I think it is Roy. But I love the tone of this trailer, and I can't wait for this season. I think we're in for another. You know, Arrow has really returned to form after what I consider to be the hiccup. Which was season four. So I think based on this trailer, we're in for another very solid season of Arrow.
I agree. I mean, you know that I love season four, but I agree that I think we're in for another solid season of Arrow because it looks awesome. I'll go ahead and ask you just because it's fun. Out of those three returning villains that we see, which one are you most excited for to see return?
So the three are Cody Rhodes, right?
Uh-huh.
The other one is, are you counting?
Russ Tiger.
Yeah.
And Brick.
I like Bronze Tiger the first time I saw him, so I'll go with Bronze Tiger.
I agree with you, actually. Yeah, Bronze Tiger for me as well. I love that character. And I particularly got to shout out Tom King's run. Love what Tom King did with him. So I'm excited for all three of them. But yeah, he would be number one for me as well.
Cool.
So Adam, we are gonna run over to the Flash trailer.
To quote Aquaman, that was, well, not to quote Aquaman, because he said that was the worst inspirational speech ever. But that was the worst obvious pun ever. But go on.
Yeah, I know. I have no shame about it, though. It's cool. we get some heavy focus on Nora. Brandon's theory, which I was sort of buying into, it is not correct. She's not going to go by impulse. I know a lot of people did expect her to go by excess, and that is going to be the case. So that is exciting. Like I said, I was bought in on Brandon's theory. I thought that would be really cool. If she were impulse, but I'm excited. I mean, to her to be excess, like a lot of people thought she was going to be too. You know, that's exciting too. So that's awesome. We get, first of all, I think the thing that people talking the most is finally getting the Flash ring. I mean, yes, we sort of saw it before, but now it looks like Barry's going to be using it full time, which, oh my goodness, so exciting. I mean, this is something we've been waiting for so long. That's awesome. Like I said, we get our glimpse at Cicada. And he does look very terrifying, so it does look like he is going to deliver that darkness that I was talking about before with the villain. We get more tease into, like, Barry asking Nora, he's like, what are you keeping from us? What happened? Sort of this mystery of what mistake she made and what happened in the future. Maybe something bad happened to Barry or to Iris. So we don't know, but it's gotten me very... even more, I was already hyped about the misery of what mistakes she made and everything, but now I'm even more hyped. So I love this trailer. What about you, man?
You're gonna be surprised to hear this, but considering my thoughts on season 4 of The Flash, I really, really like this trailer. It may be my favorite trailer of the ones we're talking about.
Of these four?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Really cool to see the Flash ring.
Yes.
One of the highlights of season 4 was the Nora reveal and the promise of delving more into that character. I'm excited to see where that goes. And what happened in her timeline that led her here.
You know what? Is funny, Adam? I think Nora might be the most common name in the DC universe. Because you've got...
That and Martha.
What's that?
That and Martha.
Oh, my goodness. well, that's... that. No, even Nora. Nora's more names than Martha. Because you've got Nora Allen. You've got Nora, Barry and Iris' daughter. So there's two Noras, Nora Allen and then Nora Allen, Barry's mother, Nora Allen, Barry's daughter. Then you've got Nora Freeze, and then you've got Nora Dark. So
maybe second.
Yeah, maybe second.
Given the volume of people. Yeah.
But anyway, that's just interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, back to the point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued about that. And the little keys that they gave to Cicada, the villain, I love it. I am so. I mean, he was terrifying.
Yeah.
And I'm, like I said, I am really optimistic this season of The Flash, which is a minor miracle considering my thoughts on season 4.
Well, I don't know if it's that much of a miracle. I mean, look at Smallville. You didn't like season 4 of Smallville very much either, but then look, we just heard your thoughts on season 5.
No, but what did I say?
With Arrow.
But what did I say at the end of season 4 is that, you know, most of the DC CW shows that we've seen so far, from in my opinion, have faltered in season 4 to rebound. So so I always was giving it that chance, and based on the trailer, it looks like that Flash will continue that trend.
Hey, well, I hope it does for you. I mean, I love season 4 of The Flash, so it doesn't have to do that for me. It doesn't have to bounce back for me. But this trailer looks amazing, and so I fully expect to love this season too. Cool. Well, moving on to the Legend trailer, I think there's more new footage than you were giving it credit for, Adam.
But it's still quite a bit of recap as well.
It is. We do see Vivo again at the game, which is so funny. He always makes me laugh. But we see sort of the Legends talking, like we get Sarah talking, like in the aftermath of their big victory at the end of season 3. So they're sort of talking about now they're not screw ups anymore, and they've had success now, and they're feel like true heroes. And then we see that basically it looks like the crux of this season, I think we've heard something to the effect of this before, is going to be all these magical anomalies, I guess. So like we see a unicorn in this trailer, which is just so fun. That's going to be cool. We see Constantine, so obviously that's how Constantine's going to play heavily into the season, and we see a good bit of him in this trailer, and so that's exciting. Obviously, we know he's going to be a series regular next year, and so it makes sense that he would be a series regular with them incorporating so much magical elements into this season. I mean, we already had quite a bit in season 3, but even more into this season, so yeah, very exciting, I would say, and yeah, I can't wait for next season of Legends.
Yeah, I mean, I had so much fun with Legends last year. And then finding out that they were adding Constantine, this trailer didn't need to sell me on anything. I was there from the get-go, so I'm ready.
Cool. Yeah. I would say none of the trailers had to sell me on anything because I love.
I mean, I would have looked even if the Flash trailer was crap.
Oh, well, I know for you, yeah, because you.
No, but even if the Flash trailer was, let's say, underwhelming. The Arrow trailer was underwhelming. You know, this trailer was underwhelming. I still would have been there.
Sure.
Day one.
Yeah. No, I got you. I get you. I'm with you. So anyway, then let's move on to this Supergirl trailer, which I feel like we already touched on quite a bit in terms of, because we were talking about the casting, but we get, first of all, a voiceover from what it sounds like Sam Witwer as Agent Liberty, and it does sound like I was talking about before, this season's going to focus heavily on this sort of this anti-alien movement, which is going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. So yeah, we see Agent Liberty in this trailer, and like I said, I really do think he reminds me of the mask that he wears, reminds me of, I totally see what you're saying with his suit reminds you of Guardian's suit in the comics. But the mask, though, it really reminds me of the voice of Rao's mask. Like, I take a second look at that, dude, because I think that looks so much like the voice of Rao's mask. But anyway, in any case, we see that. We see this armored Supergirl suit at the end, which my guess is that's probably going to be the suit that the Kara we saw in the alternate Kara we saw in the season 3 finale. My guess is that's going to be what she's wearing, and that's her. So it'll be interesting to see how she factors into things. We see Alex, a little snippet of Alex as the leader now of the DEO, which obviously was teased at the end of season 3. We see Brainy there with her too, which is very cool. This trailer looks awesome to me. I can't wait. I loved season 3 of Supergirl. I loved all the teases in particular we got at the end of season 3 leading into next season. And just getting, I mean, Sam Witwer, like I said, as a huge Smallville fan, that has me so excited to see him so involved in this. And I'm very intrigued by this whole anti-alien movement plotline that they're setting up. So,
yeah, I really enjoyed the trailer. I think I'm intrigued where they're going to go with this character that Sam Witwer is playing and the whole humans versus aliens kind of conflict. I want to see the Red Sun adaptation or their version of it. I never thought that that could be that Supergirl wearing that costume.
You did think that? Or?
I did not think of that, but that could be a good point.
Do you have a different theory? Or?
No, I just, but that's a good point.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Unlike Disney and Marvel saying there are going to be more LGBTQ characters in their universe, but not putting their money where their mouth is. Supergirl is actually casting a transgender actress to play a transgender character. And so I got to applaud it for that you know, the progressive thinking on the show. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that DC puts their money where their mouth is. So yeah, I'm on board with all this.
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's gonna do it for this episode, dude.
Yeah, I think it wraps us up pretty good.
Cool.
And it was a fun episode. It was jam packed. We got some news. We got some trailer reviews. We got Smallville season 5 done. So that's it's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had a lot of fun talking about all this stuff.
Let's remember, since we talked about Batman Year One, that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network. And you can find us and other podcasts there. And we got to do some social media plugs. You are currently still Twitter challenged, to my understanding.
Yes, unfortunately, I am still locked out. Progress on that since last episode.
So with that, where can people track you down for all this superhero geeky kind of talk?
You can find me on the DC All Access app and on Instagram at BatJordan2739. And I also want to listen to some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, I guess too. anyway, we'd love to hear from you in the form of iTunes review, and it would help us out. So thank you in advance.
And if you want to follow me, you can do so online, because if you did that in person, that would be stalking. but online, you can follow me at Superhero Sci-Fi. That brings this episode to a close. Until next time, if you're listening to this on a weekend, have a wonderful weekend. And if you're listening to this during the week, have a great week.
Back until then, forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.
And until next time, so long, everybody. All right.
I didn't realize you weren't done with your goodbye when I started.
It's okay.
My bad.